We want to make sure that if we are buying $1 trillion worth of stuff from the rest of the world, that we are selling $1 trillion worth of stuff to the rest of the world.
It's the Tom Hartman Program.
Because otherwise, we end up a banana republic.
Tom Hartman, weekday mornings, 10 to noon, on KRXA 540.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Jim Taylor. Your government at work. The Justice Department Inspector General's report details how the FBI used and abused the Patriot Act to gain information about U.S. citizens. Head of the FBI, Robert Mueller, is apologizing.
I should have provided the appropriate training, education, and internal oversight so that all out there, all in the field, understood the use of these authorities, and I did not.
I'm Peter Mayer in Sao Paulo, Brazil. While FBI Director Mueller takes the blame for his agency's mishandling of the Patriot Act, the White House says the president still has full confidence in the FBI chief and in Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez. With the president on his Latin American tour, Deputy Press Secretary Dana Perino says Mr. Bush had significant concerns over the seriousness of the issues when Gonzalez and Mueller briefed him on the irregularities last week. The president was described, though, as relieved to learn that the inspector general found no intentional misconduct.
President Bush is in South America.
Bienvenido, presidente.
He's flying right now from Sao Paulo to Buenos Aires, where they are waiting with a reception not unlike the one he received in Brazil. The anti-Bush rally, hosted by Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez, he's known for his strong anti-American stance. A showdown over gun control in Washington, D.C., this round going to those against it.
As the mayor of the District of Columbia, I am personally deeply disappointed and, quite frankly, outraged.
Mayor Adrian Fenty says the city will appeal today's overturn of a longstanding ban on handguns in Washington. The bishop, that's the name used by someone who's been mailing threatening letters and dud pipe bombs in Chicago. CBS's Bob Orr has details of the latest mailings in tonight's CBS Evening News.
These bombs came in plain white boxes, sent priority mail. They both came from a post office in Rolling Meadows, Illinois. It's a suburb in Chicago. And what's most interesting is that the addresses are hand-scrawled, not particularly neat. It's a mixture of capital letters and small letters. Investigators are hoping somebody looking at that writing might recognize the handwriting of a person, and that will lead them to the bishop.
In the aftermath of a horrific killer fire in New York City, Mayor Michael Bloomberg taking the opportunity to teach a life lesson.
Tonight, when you sit with your family, I know this, it's never going to happen to you. It's never going to. It's always going to happen to the other guy. But just sit down and say to your kids, what do I do in the case I wake up and there's a fire?
8 children and an adult dead in the late-night flames. Kroger Company says today it is reiterating its drug policies to all of its pharmacists after a Georgia woman claimed she was denied the so-called morning-after pill at one of the company's stores. Stocks turning in a mixed showing today. The market continues to show stability after last month's plunge. The Dow finishing with a gain of more than 15 points. The NASDAQ Composite Index down a fraction. The S&P 500 adding one. This is CBS News.
The following is a paid commercial message.
It's estimated that over 200 million people in the U.S. suffer from herpes-caused cold sores. There are many products on the market today. Relieve One-Day Cold Sores Symptom Treatment is excellent because it relieves cold sore symptoms in just a day. Pain eases in minutes and other symptoms resolve in just 24 hours. Relieve is non-toxic, comprised of botanical extracts, and is 100% guaranteed. Millions of sufferers have found that Relieve works best for them. Only you can determine that Relieve is best for you. You can now buy Relieve at most major stores.
Hello?
Mr. Johnson, this is Greg's cell phone calling.
My son, Greg?
Yeah, I'm with him all the time. I know what's up.
Yeah? What's up?
Well, the other night, Greg was at this cat's crib, and he was smoking a blunt.
What? I'll put the fear into that kid?
No, I meant the other dude. Greg passed.
Still, if he was there, let me talk to Greg.
Hold up. G's taking a test right now. I'm turned off.
And then how can...
Try us back after school. That's prime time.
Talking. The anti-drug. Learn more at theantidrug.com.
Paid for by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Disney continues to break the animated princess color barrier. Let's go to Bourbon Street.
This newest Walt Disney film is set here in New Orleans in the French Quarter. Officials say the Once Upon a Time musical adventure, The Frog Princess, is set in the legendary birthplace of jazz, New Orleans, and introduces the newest Disney princess, Maddie. She's a young African-American girl living amid what they call the charming elegance and grandeur of the fabled French Quarter. Written by the team that brought us The Little Mermaid and Aladdin, Frog Princess introduces Disney's first ever Black Princess. Dave Cohen for CBS News, New Orleans.
Chrysler is recalling over 489,000 vehicles, including recent models of the Jeep Liberty, Dodge Durango, and the all-new Dodge Avenger sedan, all of this because of the risk of overheating. You lose an hour's sleep this weekend. Daylight saving time arriving 3 weeks early this year by an act of Congress, also being extended an extra week into November. I'm Jim Taylor, CBS News.
Where fresh Ahi Tuna is seasoned and seared. The salmon, tender. The steaks, thick and juicy. Your only worry, you might have to share.
Let's go out back tonight.
Tonight, let go.
Life is better when together.
Go out back. Okay, this is how I run my business. I put receipts at the front of the shoebox, unpaid invoices go in the back.
But, hon, what happens if you drop the shoebox?
I might cry a little.
You know, there's an easier way to manage your business. Use QuickBooks. It's so simple, you can be up and running in under 15 minutes. With just a few clicks, QuickBooks software lets you send invoices, see who's paid you and who hasn't, and get ready for tax time.
Great. What'll I do with my shoebox?
Put shoes in it? Just throwing it out there.
QuickBooks. Better, faster, simpler. Get it at Staples, Office Depot, or Sam's Club.
Peter B. Collins!
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Welcome to another edition of the Peter B. Collins Show, live, unscripted, and unrehearsed, originating in San Francisco. Can you stand it? We've got a lot to talk about today, and as usual, I don't expect to find any room to discuss the latest disposition of the cadaver of Anna Nicole Smith. And I'm not sure of the rehab status of Britney Spears either. Won't be time to pursue that, I'm sorry. Go to Infotainment Tonight or one of those shows. I'm sure they've got the latest on all that. Or maybe the Fox News Channel. On today's program, we'll have a wide-ranging discussion first hour with Professor Bill Beeman. He's now chair of the Anthropology Department, University of Minnesota. Also on today's program, Larissa Alexandrovna from RawStory.com. She's been hard at work on the story about our nation's intentions toward Iran. And also at her blog, she's got an item up today about how Canada has elected to restore civil rights. They allowed their anti-terrorism statutes to expire, setting a good example for their neighbors to the south, if you ask me. Also on today's program, libertarian Ivan Eland from the Independent Institute will join us to talk about the surge, the one in Afghanistan. And how about that Taliban welcome wagon for Dick Cheney at Bagram yesterday, huh? Unfortunately, 23 people lost their lives in that exchange. And in our third and final hour, lots of room for your phone calls in the free speech zone. And we'll kick it off with an angry email from a listener in Arizona who thinks that I am a defender of kiddie porn. And he used some pretty strong language to describe me. We'll share that with you as the show goes on a little bit later. And if you'd like to call in at any moment, you're welcome to do so. We even pay for the call. It's toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. William O. Beeman joins us now. He, according to Wikipedia, is still at Brown University, where he is a professor of anthropology. But we know he's moved to the University of Minnesota, where he now chairs the anthro department. Bill Beeman, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Thanks so much, Peter. Nice to be there.
When did you make the move? Did you shift out there with Al Franken and his posse?
Yeah, I'm following Al. Al Franken was actually from Minnesota.
Right.
So, but I have a claim to being being attached to Minnesota. My mother was actually born here.
I see.
But I've been here for about 6 weeks, and they've been having a terrific time. The snow is coming again today, but as Minnesotans will tell you the snow in Minnesota is really different from the snow every place else. It's much more pleasant.
Well, maybe it's time to update your Wikipedia entry, and you're allowed to do that yourself. Members of Congress do it all the time. It says you're an actor, author, singer, and the professor of anthropology at Brown. They got to update that. You were born in Manhattan, Kansas.
Correct.
And you're a big opera fan. You wrote a book called The Third Line, The Opera Performer as Interpreter.
Well, I'm an opera singer.
Wow.
And I spent 3 years singing in an opera house in Germany, and I continue a professional singing career as well as my anthropological career.
Oh, well, I'm sorry I'm not big into opera. I would know that. But I commend you for it. Now, there's also a little line down here that may be a good starting point for our conversation. You gained notoriety for an infamous public spat with Michael Ledeen, who, of course, has been really a player in the neocon world, helped get us into this wonderful situation in Iraq. And he's one of those people who's been counseling the White House on the surge, appears to have had some murky meetings in other parts of the world, may have been connected to the whole Niger story as it was funneled through Italian intelligence, if that's not a self-canceling phrase. What's your current status with Mr. Ledeen?
Well, we haven't talked in some time, but one of my difficulties with Michael Ledeen is that he makes incredible pronouncements about Iran all the time. He doesn't speak the language. He's never gone to the country. In fact, his only connection with Iran is his involvement with the Iran-Contra scandal, in which he was a major player. He, to his credit, I guess, has written about that whole episode in his life in a book, but he has some extremely weird and off-the-wall ideas about Iran. For one, he promulgates the idea that somehow Iran could be broken up along ethnic lines. That's something that that AEI has held several, American Enterprise Institute has held several seminars on.
And to do that, we would separate the Persians from?
Well, I don't know, the Azerbaijanis or the Kurds or the Baluchis in the southeast part of the country, but the simple fact is that Iran is a multi-ethnic society and has been for maybe 2,500 years, and the people who live within Iran's borders are very closely identified with Iranian civilization. They're very proud of it, and in particular the Azerbaijanis, who are Turkish speaking, have actually ruled Iran. They were the ones who actually introduced Shiism into Iran as the state religion, and they're very tightly integrated with Iranian society. So the idea that somehow the Azerbaijanis could be, could be encouraged to revolt against the current government of Iran is really an absurdity. But nevertheless, this is one of the fantasies that is promulgated by the American Enterprise Institute today, and Mr. Ledeen is one of the individuals who flogs that particular horse very strongly. He's also spread rumors that Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, who's the spiritual leader of Iran, is on his deathbed. And of course, Mr. Khamenei has regularly now appeared in public to give the lie to that particular rumor. Mr. Ledeen has been trying to promote the idea of regime change in Iran, ever since the beginning of the Bush administration. And unfortunately for, I think, the world, he has the ear of the White House. He is one of the people who talks regularly to Karl Rove, and his ideas are promulgated very widely within the White House. It's unusual to have a person who has no elected office have so much influence over our foreign policy, and especially with such very, very strange and bizarre notions about how Iran is constructed and what the internal situation in Iran is.
We're talking with Professor Bill Beeman here on the Peter B. Collins Show. If you have a question or comment, he's with us this hour. Toll free, 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. Professor, on this program, we talk almost every day about the saber-rattling toward Iran, and I believe that this administration has intentions that they have not only failed to disclose, but they are lying about. And I'd like to just ask you, we got about 2 minutes till the next break, what is your assessment of the intentions toward Iran, and have they ratcheted up the tensions to the point where some accidental provocation could provide the opportunity to implement the kinds of plans that Michael Ledeen has been promoting?
Well, it's precisely that that big question about whether something accidental could trip off a confrontation between Iran and the rest of the world that has got most of us who are concerned with the region worried. Iran actually poses no threat whatever to the United States at present. There's nothing that Iran does that really threatens the United States. No Iranian was involved in the 9/11 attacks. Iran is antithetical to Al-Qaeda. The people in Al-Qaeda actually hate the Shia and counsel people to attack them or to kill them. So there is no particular reason for Iran to support Al-Qaeda. They were absolutely opposed to the Taliban. In many ways, Iran and the United States are very much on the same side. But we've had a confrontation with Iran ever since the Iranian Revolution of 1978 and 1979. And the United States is very much trying to prevent Iran from exerting its power as a regional force. So we have a confrontation that really is quite artificial. I've written about this actually in a recent book called The Great Satan versus the Mad Mullahs, How the United States and Iran Demonize Each Other.
Mm-hmm.
And this in the book I really lay out this 30-year pattern of mutual demonization that has taken place between the United States and Iran. And it's an old habit that we don't seem to be able to break.
Well, we're going to take a break here, and we'll pick up there as we continue. I want to talk about the efforts that Iran has made to contact the United States that appear to have been rebuffed. We know that Karl Rove and Secretary Rice were aware of a contact, but apparently didn't pursue it just a few years back. And we'll talk more, too, about the military moves and the diplomatic moves in the region that are underway right now. If you have a question or comment, you're welcome to join this conversation. Toll free at 888-5-PETER-B. It's 888-573-8372. And I remain your humble host, Peter B. Collins.
You're listening to the new KRXA 540. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens, he cares.
Hello, I'm here to tell you about Central Avenue Bakery in beautiful Pacific Grove. Every day we feature the finest and freshest healthy whole grain foods with vegan and wheat-free options for those so inclined. We mill our own organic, fresh whole grain flour daily. Galina, our Russian pastry chef, turns those fresh whole grains into delicious masterpieces. Muffins, cakes, cookies, pies, banana chocolate bars, macaroons. She adds new items all the time. We also have a variety of whole grain breads, fresh homemade sandwiches, soups, and veggie entrees made with mostly organic ingredients. Our all-you-can-eat Sunday buffet with the top vegetarian entrees, soups, salads, and desserts is locally famous. We also welcome groups, parties, and catering orders. Stop in for a latte, snack, or full meal. You'll come back again and again. Come visit us at 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey in the old Granary building, just two blocks from the aquarium, or give us a call at 373-2000. That's 373-2000. Central Avenue Bakery, where healthy and delicious go hand in hand.
ZNS Auto Sales in Monterey, family owned for 30 years, is where partnership works. Whether you're a first-time buyer and need a safe economy car, or looking for a truck or SUV or a classic, they have it all. Call ZNS before you make that final decision. ZNS open every day at 1179 Del Monte Boulevard between the Navy Postgraduate School and Lake El Estero. High-quality used cars at the very best prices. ZNS Auto Sales, where partnership works.
I am attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am attorney Sean Mills.
Concerned about the steady increase in home mortgage interest rates? Don't panic or overreact. Now is the time to analyze the many available options and to choose the best possible course. Leverage the equity in your home to reduce or eliminate high interest and non-deductible debt. Victor Munoz, president of Creative Mortgage, invites you for a free consultation in his Salinas offices at 201 John Street. To schedule your free Creative Mortgage consultation, call Victor at 757-0436 right now. That's 757-0436.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show, 21 minutes after the hour. My guest this hour is Professor Bill Beeman, William O. Beeman, formerly of Brown University, where I'm just finishing a four-year investment plan. And he's now a chair of the anthropology department at the University of Minnesota. His latest book is called The Great Satan versus the Mad Mullahs, How the United States and Iran Demonize Each Other. And we're going to try to get a copy and invite the professor back to talk about it when I've had a chance to read it. Bill Beeman, I wanted to ask you next about missed opportunities. We know about the 18-page letter that Ahmadinejad wrote to Bush last year. That was ignored for all practical purposes. And we've learned more recently that there was an overture apparently in 04 or 05.
Actually, it was 03.
In 2003, okay.
Yeah.
And it appeared to have been delivered to Karl Rove, the political operative at the White House, and not to key National Security Council figures.
Yeah, I think that the Iranians were are in some ways too clever by half. I mean, they realized where the power really lies. Right then, at that point in time, the national security establishment was under deep suspicion by the White House, and I think that the Iranians were interested in using what they thought was the most direct channel to get to the president. It's very interesting how both the United States and Iran kind of misread each other. The United States, regularly these days anyway, seems to promulgate the idea that, for instance, President Ahmadinejad has some kind of all-powerful role within the Iranian government. And in fact, he is a rather powerless figure structurally within the Iranian government. The Iranian president doesn't have any control over the nuclear program or over the military or over foreign policy. He's mostly concerned with domestic work. And in the Iranian situation, they, I think, have decided that these rather secret back channels are, in fact, the way to affect foreign policy within the United States.
Well, do you think that they're still holding on to one of those Bibles that Ollie North got Ronald Reagan to autograph back in Iran-Contra?
Yeah, they might be. Actually, the president at that time was Mr. Rafsanjani.
Right.
And his star continues to rise. He's a 70-year-old cleric, now become a very, very wealthy man in mm-hmm. Iran. He's a person who has a very deep ambiguity among the Iranian people. I mean, they recognize him as an extraordinarily effective political operator, but perhaps a scallywag, and who knows how much of his current wealth was appropriated in unusual ways. But he was the person who was involved with the United States during the Iran-Contra affair, and he continues to be quite an important player politically. He was the runner-up in the presidential election to Mr. Ahmadinejad.
That's right. Yeah.
He was recently elected to the Assembly of Experts who oversee the work of the chief spiritual leader. We've had dealings actually on a regular basis, and Iran. This isn't this message in 2003 was delivered through the Swiss embassy actually, who handles the American affairs in Iran, and the Swiss the messenger who brought it was rebuked by the U.S. government. They was told that he was completely inappropriate for him to be delivering a message to the United States of this sort. The Iranians have made many, many overtures to the United States.
Yeah, and we're kind of talking past one another, aren't we? I mean, Bush goes to the United Nations and said, I have a message for the people of Iran.
That's right.
And Ahmadinejad, I'm not sure the correct pronunciation, but he...
That's better than most people.
Okay. Well, I understand that in Arabic and those languages that the H's are often...
this H is a soft H, but the important point, just for your listeners who are wondering, the accent is on the last syllable of his name, and this is an unusual pattern for American, for English speakers. So it's Ahmadinejad.
Okay. So at any rate, we tend to puff up his importance looking for a demon. You know, the pattern Bush paraphrases has been to really personalize it. You know, Manuel Noriega was the most dangerous man on the planet until we went to Panama and snatched him. And then we shifted that to Saddam. And, you know, we love to find a real icon or individual who we can focus our angst on. But it doesn't really work in Iran, does it?
No, in Iran, the situation has been since the very beginning that they've been there's a multiplicity of political players in Iran, and there's a lot of political dialogue, very interesting kinds of undercurrents of political thought, and quite a lot of dissension. In fact, Mr. Ahmadinejad is absolutely at odds with the spiritual leader. He was from almost the minute he was elected.
Really?
So they are not in very good shape with each other. And the central government has repudiated much of what he has said. In fact, his pronouncements about the Holocaust and so forth have been openly repudiated by the Iranian government. So it's very wrong, actually, on our part, and very naive and perhaps misleading for us to say that Mr. Ahmadinejad speaks for the entire Iranian government or the Iranian people.
Joe in Phoenix, join us with Professor Beeman here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Peter B. and Professor, how are you gentlemen today?
Doing
well,
all right.
Thank you.
Good. It seems to me that Ahmadinejad became this demon, Peter B., as you put it, when he made his pronouncements about the Holocaust and when Israel threatened to blow up nuclear works that the Iranians were doing if the United States didn't take action. And then after that, we find ourselves having two naval carrier groups, perhaps a third one on its way over there. But what I find really interesting about all of this is that, you know, at first, the issue in the Middle East was the Palestinian-Israeli conflict, which America has failed to be an honest broker on. We looked the other way. That festered to the extent that Sharon really started engaging in his genocide campaign on the Palestinians. And then 9/11 happened, and then we demonized Afghanistan, ironically, only because some of these people may have trained there or Osama bin Laden was over there. Yet, ironically, it was mostly Saudi Arabians who engaged in the 9/11 activities. So we go over and blow the hell out of, Afghanistan, and then for some reason
we
switch our attention.
Joe, I'm sorry to do this, but I have a break coming that I cannot control.
Okay.
And you've got a great question there, so hang on, and after the break, I'm going to let you start over again, and we'll talk about it at length, okay?
We'll do it.
All right. Thanks for your patience there. It's the Peter B. Collins Show. Professor William O. Beeman is my guest.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Hey, good looking. I'll tell you what I got cooking, Dinners Ready. I went to dinnersready.com, chose 8 gourmet dinners, made an appointment, and went to their storefront in the Country Club Gate Center in Pacific Grove and prepared the meals there myself. Now I'm cooking them in my own home.
What's that you say? Dinners Ready?
That's right, Dinners Ready. It's the newest concept in home cooking. They do all the shopping and chopping, and I get all the credit. If you're too busy to go in and make your dinners, they'll even do it for you. So sign up at dinnersready.com, stop by and see them in the Country Club Gate Center in Pacific Grove, or give them a call at 645-9100. That's 645-9100. Dinner's ready.
The days of wine and roses.
The fastest growing disease in America is addiction. It's time we talk about it openly. This is Sheila Gale. Join me Saturday afternoons from 4 to 5 for 12-Step Talk Uncensored, where we deal with addiction. It's about time.
That wasn't there before.
Children's books, educational toys, and games your entire family will enjoy are always in season at locally owned and operated Thinker Toys. Hi, this is Nurse Rona of Childhood Matters. We know that our children learn by playing, and the caring staff at Thinker Toys will help you choose the ideal gift for toddlers through teens. Stop by our beautiful Carmel store at 7th and San Carlos and the just renovated Thinker Toys at Del Monte Center in Monterey. Thinker Toys is open daily.
Attention all KRXA listeners. Are you worried about not having enough money for a truly comfortable retirement? Were you aware that you have the ability to buy real estate within your individual retirement account without government penalty since 1974? Bet you didn't know that. Only 2% of the U.S. population is even aware of the law. If your IRA had been invested in California real estate 20 years ago, you'd be a multimillionaire today. The retirement specialist will show you how to purchase California property right inside your IRA. They've helped nearly 10,000 people in the last four decades achieve their retirement goals by rolling over their IRAs and 401ks into profitable California real estate. Give them a call at 831-794-8485 to learn more about this underutilized retirement investment. That's 831-794-8485. If you want to achieve financial independence by the time you retire, then call now. There's nothing to lose, only valuable knowledge to gain. Call 831-794-8485 and ask for the retirement specialist.
Every Sunday morning at 10, listen to Rock Roller Real Estate. The number one Sunday morning Bay Area real estate show is now on KRXA 540.
If you want to learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling high-end homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are, this is the show for you. Rock Roller Real Estate, the Bay Area's number one Sunday morning real estate show, now covering the Central Coast. For more information on how to become a guest, call 408-892-3376. Rock Roller Real Estate.
The healthcare system is broken. That doesn't mean you have to be. Capitola Physical Therapy helps you return to the level of function you need with skilled personal attention. Whether it's golf, tennis, walking, or simply getting out of bed and maintaining your balance, Capitola Physical Therapy understands, cares, and knows how to help. Call Capitola Physical Therapy at 475-1200. That's 475-1200.
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media.
Really?
Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
And we continue our conversation with William O. Beeman. He's chair of the Anthropology Department at the University of Minnesota. And he's the author of a recent book called The Great Satan versus the Mad Mullahs, How the United States and Iran Demonize Each Other. And we continue with our listener, Joe in Phoenix, a very well-informed guy who had a long question that we ran out of time for before. We got plenty of time now, almost all day. So go ahead, Joe.
Thank you, Peter B. My point is, and it's I'll try to be brief with it, but I want to set the stage for this. So 9/11 occurred. We attacked Afghanistan, although it was Saudi Arabians who attacked us. Then we attacked Iraq, who had nothing to do at all with 9/11, and we lied to the American people. When I say we, I use that word generically. The lies were made to the American people to justify invading a country who never invaded us. We're now embroiled after 4 years and over 3,000 American lives in an occupation over there where we now are fighting Shia. Well, we're actually fighting Sunnis, and some Shia are fighting the Sunnis, but there may be some Shia militia who might be fighting our American forces over there, and the Shia in Iran support the Shia in Iraq, and the Sunni in Iraq who are killing our guys are now being supported by other Sunnis, specifically sponsored primarily by Saudi Arabia, our quote, good friends, end quote, who originally, remember, the ones who attacked us were part of the Wahhabi sect of the Muslim religion, the right-wing nutcases, if you will, of the Sunnis. And so now we find ourselves fighting the Sunnis there, but the Saudi Arabians are supporting the Sunnis. And in the meantime, we now have special operation forces excuse me, in Lebanon, supporting and being supported by factions or elements who are aligned with Al-Qaeda, and we are supporting then Al-Qaeda against Hezbollah because we don't like the Shia. And so it is, what a crazy mess we are in, and I believe that we're in Iran primarily because Israel threatened to go there if we didn't, and now we're in Lebanon.
Well, let me, Joe, tag your question with this comment, and then we'll give the professor an opportunity to respond. Mm-hmm. Did the U.S. go in there just to stir up a hornet's nest, oblivious to the alliances and the different groups that you just described and defined, and we just kind of said, hey, let's blow it up and see what happens? I mean, it seems almost that reckless. Bill Beaman?
Well, you know, first of all, I thank Joe for this litany of missteps that we've made. I mean, his characterization is completely accurate, and you know, in the end, you see that the Bush administration's solution to all of this problem is to what? Attack Iran, which makes no sense at all, and to extend the conflict throughout the Middle East. But in order to understand what actually is going on, you kind of have to step back a bit. Starting in 1992, the neoconservatives, including individuals like John Bolton and Richard Perle, began to formulate a plan that was actually presented to Israel in 1996, and it was a plan for solving all of Israel's political problems. And this was to first of all attack Iraq, then to attack Syria, and finally to attack Iran. And once all of those nations had undergone regime change, then the support for for Hamas and the Hezbollah in Lebanon would dry up, and Israel would be safe for all time.
It was called Project for a New American Century.
That's right, the Project for a New American Century. And the document, they proudly display those documents on their website. And that is really the plan that is being carried out.
And in order to facilitate that plan, intelligence was manufactured and channeled to the Oval Office with people like Douglas Feith, who happened to be an administrative assistant of Benjamin Netanyahu, former Prime Minister of Israel.
Exactly. And all of this is actually open documentation. We know about it. And once the Bush administration came into power, every one of the people who had planned this operation were placed in power in Washington. They were Douglas Feith and Perle and Bolton and Cheney and Rumsfeld, who were also involved with this, as well as Myrav Wormser and David Wormser at the American Enterprise Institute. In fact, the American Enterprise Institute just reads as a roster of the people who were involved with this planning throughout the 1990s.
And the media, like Bill Kristol?
Right. Bill Kristol also was involved. And so what we're seeing is this plan going ruthlessly forward, despite the fact that it's creating havoc and chaos throughout the entire region, and bears no logic to anything that would stabilize the situation within the Middle East.
But Professor, who wanted the plan to go forward?
Well,
Israel wanted the plan to go forward, and they had agents here to do it. Who wanted Iran invaded? Israel did. So I blame Israel for a lot of it, and now I blame Saudi Arabia going to get us involved, ironically aligning ourselves with, guess who? Al-Qaeda. If the three of us were to sit down and write the most bizarre script for a comedy movie on geopolitics, the three of us could never write a more bizarre scenario.
Well, I should say that the situation with the United States was aided by the fact that we were already very badly disposed toward Iran. Iran was the all-purpose demon for both Democrats and Republicans for the last 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
No American politician ever lost a vote by attacking Iran. And
Joe,
so they were. And so, even though Iran poses no danger to the United States, has not participated in any attacks against the United States, there's no proof that they actually have a weapons program, and is no threat to Israel either. Nevertheless, they've been identified as the most dangerous nation on earth by the United States, and that's what
because
we're using
of, to justify
because
of Israel, Professor. We didn't care that much about Iran before. We certainly weren't sending naval carrier groups, task forces there until Israel said, golly, we need to destroy them because they said bad things about the Holocaust.
All right, Joe, you're an excellent caller. I really appreciate it. It's gratifying
to
see how well informed you are, and I thank you for joining us here today. Professor Beeman, just last week, the Times of London reported that Israel has asked the United States for permission to overfly the airspace we control in Iraq for the purpose of delivering bombs to Iran.
Yes.
Is that a credible report? And what does it mean? Is that something the U.S. wants as a way to give us cover for a military assault?
I had read these reports. My friends in Israel, who are actually opposed to this move, tell me that the rumors in Israel are flying that Israel, in fact, will bomb Iranian nuclear facilities. And I can't tell you whether it's actually going to happen or not, but I think that the plans have been laid for this. And we have a recent report from Seymour Hersh in the New Yorker there are plans already in place in Washington for some kind of military operation. Now, never mind that bombing the current nuclear development facilities in Iran is not going to stop the nuclear program, the nuclear energy program in Iran.
Yeah.
It absolutely will have no effect at all. It might set it back a year or two, but we know that even if we knew that the Iranians had a weapons program, which has not been proven, it would be 5 to 10 years before they could even get enough visible material to even make one bomb.
Right.
So we're talking about something that is in really quite a ways in the future, and
there are far more imminent threats to
absolutely.
The U.S. and to our allies and neighbors. Let's take another call. Peter V. in Monterey, welcome.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Two quick points, Professor Beeman.
Yes.
First, a cold lutefisk, loon, and lady slipper. Welcome to the West Coast. And
yes,
second, if you would, given the...
Wait, Peter, can you translate that for the opera impaired?
It's a Minnesota inside sort of joke.
Oh.
Mr. Beeman might be able to...
Lutefisk is fish soaked in lye until it turns to jelly, and it's something that people eat sometimes.
I see. Okay.
Well, anyway, Professor Beeman, could you give an assessment of the alleged Mukta al-Sadr Ahmadinejad alliance? And I'll take the answer off there. Thank you, gentlemen.
All right, Peter.
Well, Muqtada al-Sadr is a member of the Sadr family in Iraq, and it's interesting. In the 1920s, the British were reporting that there's this horrible Shia family, the Sadrs, that are giving us all kinds of trouble. And what is what's curious about this is that Muqtada al-Sadr is not at all a person who is favored by the Iranian government, and yet the United States has been trying to insinuate that the Iranian government is helping him.
Mm-hmm.
The reason is because Muqtada al-Sadr is actually in opposition to the establishment Shia clerics, and in particular in opposition to Ali al-Sistani, the probably the most revered Shia cleric living today. And so he does have a few supporters within Iran, but the Iranian government does not want him to succeed, and he doesn't have the scholarly credentials that would make him a senior revered cleric in his own right. He's a very young guy, and a kind of a hothead,
yeah.
And also a very fierce Iraqi patriot. He even though he's Shia, he does not want Iranian interference in Iraq at all. And so it's completely absurd for the United States to try to say that Muqtada al-Sadr is being supported by the Iranian government.
And on the absurd scale, Bill Beaman, is it more absurd than the attempts we heard to link al-Qaeda with 9/11?
No.
I'm sorry, al-Qaeda with Iraq.
No, the American public knows very little about this area. And so I'm afraid, the Bush administration, I can't believe that they don't know these basic facts about the political actors in the region.
Mm-hmm.
And so, quite honestly, they're just lying. And they're lying in order to make the American public believe that Iran is doing dastardly things that are worthy of attack.
Now, what about the president's comments where he specifically cites the Quds, Q-U-D-S, which is a... Why don't you define who that is? But he says they're the source of these shaped charges and other munitions that are being used to kill Americans in Iraq, even though most of the Americans dying are dying from Sunni insurgents in Anbar province.
Certainly. The Quds is a specialized force within the Revolutionary Guards, and it is in some ways, they're within Iran, they're wheels within wheels. The Quds are not controlled by the central government in any sense. There are a lot of militia forces like them that grew up at the time of the revolution and have maintained a rather independent stance. Now, that being said, it's easy to pin something on them because it's known that they're kind of loose cannons within the Iranian situation. But I've just seen a series of recent reports on the American claims that the Quds or some Iranian source is supplying these weapons. And they just are crazy. If you take a look at the actual materials that the U.S. Army was trying to display in order to demonstrate that Iran was supplying these materials, you find that there might be one or two components of the IEDs that they were displaying that possibly might have come from Iran, but they can't be proven. And the rest are just garden variety Radio Shack type stuff that came from everywhere in the region, in the Arab world. And who knows where they came from? They could have been bought. They could have been bought easily on the open market. The so-called serial numbers that they were using to trace back to Iran are general serial numbers that are found on weapons of this type that are found anywhere within the region.
Well, some of them actually looked like they were serial numbers that came off cereal boxes because they were in English.
But the press and in fact our congressional members were absolutely right to be enormously skeptical of these claims.
We have to take a break, Professor.
Possible claims.
We're going to continue in just a moment with Bill Beaman from the University of Minnesota. If you have a question or comment, he's an expert on Iran, and he'll be with us for one more segment. My toll-free number is 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show.
KRXA 540, Progressive Talk.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
In these
as United States, you have many rights. You have the right to assemble. You have the right to free speech. You have the right to worship as you choose. And when you disagree with Billy Sunshine, you have the right to be wrong.
The Billy Sunshine Show, right here on KRXA 540 AM. Tune in Sundays 3 to 5.
All you guys on the left, you demonize this president.
In Gitmo, they're not even garden variety POWs. They're the worst of the worst. They don't even receive the protection of the Geneva Conventions.
Man, I really believe that Fagan and the abortionists and the feminists and the gays and the lesbians who are actively trying to make that an alternative lifestyle, the ACLU, People for America, all of them who tried to secularize America, I point the thing in their face that you helped this happen.
I totally concur. And the problem is we've adopted that agenda at the highest levels of our government. And so
Saddam Hussein is a threat to the American people. And I've got good evidence to believe that.
Undeclared chemical warheads in Iraq.
The declaration that he made is proof positive.
Saddam Hussein possesses some of the world's deadliest weapons.
Saddam Hussein has biological weapons and the capability to rapidly produce more, many more.
The world is increasingly seeing this from the United States' point of view.
Saddam Hussein is not disarming.
He's not disarming.
Saddam Hussein is not disarming.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show, 9 minutes away from the hour, as we continue our conversation with Professor William O. Beeman. His most recent book, as we've mentioned, The Great Satan versus the Mad Mullahs, How the U.S. and Iran Demonize Each Other. And, Professor, it was Scott Dick, who's actually in Europe right now. He's a regular contributor to our program, who reminded me about you. I've talked to you once or twice in the past.
Certainly.
And he has insisted that I ask you one question, and I'm delighted to do so. And it's about the recent announcement that the U.S. is giving our Star Wars technology, which is just about useless, to the Czech Republic and Poland. And we're trying to figure out who they would be protected from if the Star Wars system actually worked.
No idea. That's a fascinating question. And all I can say is that the Poland and the Czech Republic were two of the nations that supplied little teeny contingents of soldiers.
Wait. You're talking about the coalition of the billing.
That's right, exactly. And
let's have some respect, Professor. I mean, they were there guarding the PX or the Burger King. I don't know what.
Well, I think that there are some nations that, like Kazakhstan, that contributed, I don't know, two or three people, and they that qualifies them for being part of the coalition.
Well, and they gave us the Borat movie, so that, you know, that's a contribution that's priceless.
Well, in any case, I would say that the Star Wars technology is probably a case of, you know, boys and their toys. I mean, they undoubtedly are rewarding the Czechs and the Poles for their cooperation with us, but as you point out, the technology is just ridiculous. It's more of a cash sink than anything.
I mean, why don't we give them PS3 or some Wii's from Nintendo?
Well, something that would be of use.
Yeah.
With the as far as I can see, you know, the Star Wars technology is largely a boondoggle to, you know, to protect the military industrial supporters of the Republican Party.
Well, and also, you know, Jack Murtha, who I give a lot of credit to for his posture on the war in Iraq and his opposition to the Bush administration, he's the top dog in the House in terms of receiving campaign contributions from the industry that benefits from the Star Wars program.
That's very interesting, you know.
Yeah.
But it does go to show you, I mean, I'm a registered independent, and I can be just as cynical about the Democrats as I can about the Republicans.
Well, we're equal opportunity on this program, so don't pull any punches or hold back. Mark in Phoenix, you're next. Thanks for calling. You're on the air with Professor Beeman.
Well, thank you for taking my call.
I hate it when you say that, but okay.
I really love your program, and I can't tell you how much I'll miss you if they change it over to the night program.
Well, thank you, Mark. I appreciate that.
Yeah, I have a question for the professor.
Sure.
I know that Iran is a highly educated country, and given their current stance with anti-American Semitism, what is their stance on America's threat?
Well, Iranians are actually, many Iranians don't believe that the United States is actually going to attack them. I mean, I think they find that the American threats are not credible. I think that they're probably not wise to underestimate the kind of crazy factor in the White House these days.
Right.
Because a lot of people feel that that George Bush feels honor bound to actually, you know, lob a bomb at Iran before he leaves office as a kind of a parting a blow. But Iranians are generally, you know, very well disposed to the United States. I would actually recommend that anybody who has an interest in Iran consider taking a trip there. That sounds kind of unusual for in the United States, but many Americans have gone there. It's a beautiful country, and people are treated extraordinarily well. And a vacation in Iran is rather inexpensive. It's completely possible through a tour company to get a visa and go, and many have done it.
Oh, just tell them you work for that Halliburton subsidiary in the Cayman Islands.
That's right. Well, Halliburton was actively operating in Iran for really some time until it was until it came out that in fact they were they were violating U.S. Trade laws in order to be able to do that through a subsidiary.
Yeah, Mark, thank you for your call. Professor, I want to ask you to comment on one thing in closing here. We've got about 2 minutes. And that is, the curtain of the corporate media in this country doesn't permit us to hear criticism of our government that comes from some unfriendly sources. And so Ahmadinejad has a whole spiel that I think gets great traction in his part of the world about how we're clinging to the post-World War II hierarchy. Vladimir Putin attacked the United States, and unfortunately many of his criticisms were right on target. Hugo Chavez has done the same. And yet we put on earplugs or press the mute button and simply demonize these people when they're actually saying things that are quite credible to our to populations all across the world.
Well, that's correct. I mean, I should point out Mr. Ahmadinejad's views on the Holocaust and so forth weren't really directed to an international audience. They were designed to shore up his own supporters within Iran, who helped him actually to withstand some of the criticisms from the other central government figures. But he and Mr. Putin and others are, I think, just dead on. The United States is locked in a post-Cold War mentality. We cannot get rid of the idea that the world is a dichotomous place. And so not having communists anymore, we've decided to take the Islamic world as the monolith against which we are going to rail in our in conducting our foreign policy. It makes no sense. It defies absolutely all logic, but it's something that a habit of thought that our politicians who were reared in the post the Cold War can understand with their tiny little minds. And so the substitution of the Islamic world for the communist world is virtually complete in terms of the conceptions that we have in Washington, and it's quite a shame that that the American public was so easily misled into this misconception.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you for your time today, Professor. When we get a copy of your book, I'll read it, and then we'll call you back and ask you to come on, and we can talk about it with a little more information.
Well, thank you very much. I really do appreciate the chance to talk to your audience.
Thank you, sir.
Okay.
That's William O. Beeman, now chairman of the Anthropology Department at the University of Minnesota. Coming up next, Larissa Alexandrovna and her visit this week. We'll talk about Canada restoring civil rights and also the latest on Iran, if she's got some. That's ahead here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service now has three locations to serve you better wherever you live. All three locations feature full service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or, in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
"We're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service."
Specializing in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for friendly, fast, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service. Now located in Santa Cruz at 1807 Soquel Avenue across from Walgreens, in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road and Soquel Drive, and now in Aptos Village across the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Call 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service, full service.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Patriot Act abuses. The FBI director takes the blame.
I am the person responsible. I am the person accountable.
In Latin America, a defense of U.S. policy.
I don't think America gets enough credit for trying to help improve people's lives.
This is the CBS World News Roundup, late edition. I'm Bill Whitney. Once again, the Bush administration finds itself on defense, this time after revelations that FBI agents misuse the Patriot Act to snoop on people in this country. Our coverage begins with CBS News correspondent John Harchie.
Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez says it's very upsetting to find out the FBI obtained personal phone, internet, and financial records without proper authority, but the investigation found no intentional wrongdoing.
In many cases, we're talking about people taking shortcuts.
Still, he promises to hold those responsible accountable. FBI Director Robert Mueller concedes ultimately he's accountable.
I should have provided the appropriate training, education, and internal oversight.
Mueller says he's ordered immediate corrective steps. John Harchie, CBS News, Washington.
I'm Bob Fuss on Capitol Hill. Senators who had long warned of exactly this kind of problem in giving such wide latitude to the FBI to gather private information responded with anger. And Judiciary Committee Chairman Democrat Pat Leahy wasn't buying the line that these were just mistakes.
It's not an innocent mistake. It seems to be, at least in a couple places in the FBI, this was a procedure they're going to follow.
He says the Patriot Act may need to be changed, and Pennsylvania Republican Arlen Specter agrees.
Perhaps take away some of the authority which we have already given to the FBI, since they appear not to be able to know how to use it.
The House Judiciary Committee says it will hold hearings, too. Bob Fuss, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
Now this.
And now for the bonus round. What is the molecular number of tapioca pudding?
32.
Correct. If today is yesterday's tomorrow, what is Sunday?
Slightly overcast.
Correct. About how many movies has Netflix delivered so far?
Over 1 billion.
Correct! Netflix! Over 1 billion movies delivered so far. Zero late fees. Choose movies online and get DVDs delivered to your door in about one business day. Start your free trial. Plans now from only $4.99 a month. Netflix, it's that easy.
Order! Order in the court!
It's time to render your decision. You've made up your mind, but you're twitching from the itching, squirming from the burning, and everyone's hanging on your every word.
I should have used Preparation H.
Quick recess!
Where's he going?
You should carry Preparation H portable wipes, the discreet way to get big relief. They're convenient little packets that hold very big wipes, so you can cleanse, cool, and soothe to get relief even when you're not at home.
Order! Now, my decision.
Preparation H portable wipes. Big relief to go. Use as directed.
Bienvenido, Presidente Hugo Chavez!
President Bush's nemesis in South America, Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez, appeared at an anti-American rally in Buenos Aires, just across the border from Montevideo, Uruguay, where Mr. Bush arrived late today after a visit to Brazil.
I'm Peter Mayer in Sao Paulo, Brazil. President Bush hopes his visit here and the emphasis on Brazilian ethanol will help polish the U.S. image in a part of the world that sees U.S. neglect. But he bristled at a Brazilian reporter's suggestion that the U.S. has ignored Latin America.
And so the characterization that our back has been turned is it's not borne out by the facts. It may be a perception.
Not far from the president's hotel, anti-Bush demonstrators burned an American flag while shouting, "Bush, go home." Peter Mayer, CBS News, Sao Paulo, Brazil.
No confirmation from U.S. officials, but the Iraqi military claims to have captured the leader of Islamic State in Iraq, an insurgent group affiliated with al-Qaeda. It's blamed for several major attacks, including last week's kidnapping and execution of 18 men. Abu Omar al-Baghdadi is said to have been arrested during a raid west of Baghdad. Postal inspectors hope someone will recognize the handwriting. They've gone public with the handwritten addresses on packages containing dud pipe bombs that were mailed to financial service companies in Chicago and Kansas City. CBS News correspondent Bob Orr says someone calling himself the Bishop has been sending packages and threatening letters since 2005.
The last two mailings were the two bombs, and they were both mailed the same day, January 26. Since then, there have been no letters and there have been no bombs. Investigators aren't sure what to make of that, except that over the past 2 years, the so-called Bishop has gone to ground many, many times. In the past, he's mailed letters only, and they've come out in batches.
The feds hope to catch him before he tries to make more explosives. We've just gotten word that Bradley Delp has died. He was lead vocalist for Boston. Delp died at his home in Atkinson, New Hampshire. Cause unknown, he was 55 years old. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
The following is a paid commercial message.
It's estimated that over 200 million people in the U.S. suffer from herpes-caused cold sores. There are many products on the market today. Relieve One-Day Cold Sores Symptom Treatment is excellent because it relieves cold sore symptoms in just a day. Pain eases in minutes and other symptoms resolve in just 24 hours. Relieve is non-toxic, comprised of botanical extracts, and is 100% guaranteed. Millions of sufferers have found that Relieve works best for them. Only you can determine that Relieve is best for you. You can now buy Relieve at most major stores.
Hello?
Mr. Johnson, this is Greg's cell phone calling.
My son, Greg?
Yeah, I'm with him all the time. I know what's up.
Yeah? What's up?
Well, the other night, Greg was at this cat's crib, and he was smoking a blunt.
What? I'll put the fear into that kid?
No, I meant the other dude. Greg passed.
Still, if he was there, let me talk to Greg.
Hold up. G's taking a test right now. I'm turned off.
And then how can...
Try us back after school. That's prime time.
Talking. The anti-drug. Learn more at theantidrug.com.
Paid for by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Welcome to another hour of the Peter B. Collins Show. I remain your humble host, Peter B. Our lines are open if you'd like to talk with me and our guest this hour. 888-5 Peter B is the toll-free number. 888-573-8372. Later this hour, we'll get some perspective on Hugo Chavez, the strong man who runs Venezuela. Bart Jones has a new book out called Hugo, the Hugo Chavez Story, and he writes for Newsday. He'll be joining us in about a half hour. But first, let's take a look at the legacy of Donald Rumsfeld.
It took us 10 months to find Saddam Hussein. The reality is that the hole he was found hiding in was large enough to hold enough biological weapons to kill thousands of human beings.
Oh, give it up, Remy.
Our people had gone past that farm several times, had no idea he was there. And unlike Saddam Hussein, such objects, once buried, can stay buried. In a country the size of California, the chances of inspectors finding something buried in the ground without their being led to it by people knowledgeable about where it was is minimal.
Donald Rumsfeld should hire OJ to go look for the real WMD. We get a look at the legacy of Rumsfeld as Secretary of Defense from Roger Morris, who joins us this half hour. I direct you to TomDispatch.com, where their powerful two-part series has been posted there. And Roger Morris served in the State Department and on the senior staff of the National Security Council under Presidents Johnson and Nixon. And he resigned from those posts in protest of the invasion of Cambodia. He went on to work as a legislative advisor in the U.S. Senate, director of policy studies at the Carnegie Endowment, and this Rumsfeldian history is written from intimate first-hand knowledge as well as extensive research. Welcome to our program, Roger Morris.
Thank you.
Nice to talk with you. Now, as I look back at Rumsfeld, there's one point of agreement I have with him. The timing was a little off. As he left his post, sacked by the president after the setback of the midterm elections, he acknowledged that he thought the phrase global war on terror had been a mistake. And I agree with him. I just got there a lot faster than he did.
Well, I suspect you were more thoughtful about it than he was. I think Rumsfeld saw that, as he saw so much else, as a kind of political error, as an error in tactics or in image. I'm not sure that he ever thought, as most of us do now, that these were awful mistakes in terms of the invasions, the wars, etc.
He doesn't do mistakes easily, does he?
No, he doesn't, and his career has been, in a sense, one covered-up disaster after another. That's what I was trying to write about, and it far predates the disaster in Iraq, or, for that matter, in Afghanistan. It goes back, really, to the 1960s, when he began as a young congressman from Illinois.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I want to delve into some of that history, but first I'd like to ask you about his exit speech, because he was the fall guy for the midterm elections, and that was after the president had said he wasn't going to fire him and that he expected him to serve out the presidential term all the way to end of 2008. And he gave a rather bizarre speech in front of his successor, Robert Gates, who managed to disguise any reaction he might have had. But he basically said to the president, "You and I are the only ones who really get it. We're the ones who, you know, have obtained and possess the knowledge of the real world." And his remarks were at once so arrogant and condescending, yet they're so typical of Donald Rumsfeld.
So typical, so arrogant, you're quite right, and really bitter about how much the country had betrayed him, how much even in that sense his own party and ultimately the president had betrayed him. I think there was a lot of venom there, just barely under the surface.
You write, "As no other cabinet officer in history, he squandered the integrity of his department and the unique, indispensable code of honor of its services. He joined and often led the rest of an intellectually degraded administration, heedless of constitutional and human rights. In violating the very heart of their ostensibly conservative convictions, with the ready sanctioning and then de facto cover-up of torture and abuse at Abu Ghraib, Guantanamo, and the less noticed but equally gruesome prisons at Bagram and elsewhere in Afghanistan, he changed for untold millions the symbol of America and its once proud military from freedom and the rule of law to the unforgettable prisoner's hood and shackles. Rumsfeld's impact would not vanish with terms of office or elections. By the very nature of contracts, personnel practices, and imparted ethics, some of Washington's most permanent monuments, his legacies would remain deep in the tissue and soul of the institution he was entrusted to lead." At the end, a pathetic climax to his more than four decades either in government or imploringly on its threshold, there was only his hackneyed memo on Iraq policy, leaked even more pathetically in an apparent attempt somehow to vindicate him after all. And that was the memo that he leaked after the Iraq Study Group report was published.
Yeah, that's the memo where he advises the Iraqi government to pull up its socks, ever the nuclear high school and Princeton wrestler that he that he was, and there's also, as I quoted in the piece, this memorable reference to the tactics of presenting all this. You know, we should present whatever we're going to do next only as a tentative step. That way, we won't seem to be losing. We won't seem to lose. And of course, that's almost an epitaph on Rumsfeld's career. What seemed, what was the image politically, was what he was always obsessed with.
Mm-hmm. Now, why did you have to take that swipe at Neutra High School in Wilmette, Illinois?
That's not really a swipe. It's a wonderful school, but you know, he came out of that school at a time when America was very different. We were producing Rumsfelds left and right. We were enormously confident and arrogant about the rest of the world, and he embodied that sort of overweening confidence that America didn't need to look at itself and certainly didn't need to understand the history of other people. We simply could order their lives for them.
Mm-hmm. And it's okay. I just wanted you to know I got the reference. Now, let's hit the time machine here and do a quick summary of Donald Rumsfeld up into the Reagan years, and then I want to focus on that bizarre visit to Baghdad. So he was a congressman from Illinois.
He was a hard-charging young congressman, came out of the North Shore of Chicago, very affluent district, one of the richest congressional districts in America, Winnetka and very high-end Evanston, Illinois, leafiest states there on the North Shore, and he went to Congress and established himself very, very quickly. Even before the end of his freshman year, he led an effort to install then-Congressman Jerry Ford of Michigan as the new Republican minority leader in the House, and that was a very fateful development because, of course, later Ford would become president, vice president under Nixon, and then president when Nixon resigned, and would bring his buddy Don Rumsfeld, his campaign manager, as it were, in the House, back to become White House Chief of Staff.
And Rumsfeld hired a guy who I believe dropped out of the University of Wyoming so he could go to work for Rummy, a guy named Dick Cheney.
Well, he didn't drop out of Wyoming. He'd failed at Yale.
That's what it was.
Absolute failure there. Gone back to Wyoming, and it was a telephone lineman, a lineman for the county, and not doing very well. A blue collar guy who was, I think, drinking a lot of beer on the weekends and so on.
Those were the other priorities he had.
But he had a very ambitious girlfriend named Lynn, who'd been a high school cheerleader when he was a football player there in Casper. And she sort of said, hey, you've got to shape up, buddy. And so he did go back to college, and I had the added incentive, of course, that would keep him out of the Vietnam draft. He graduated from the University of Wyoming, went off to Wisconsin to graduate school, and there he got an internship to go to work for a Wisconsin congressman, and that's where he was in Washington when Rumsfeld got appointed to head the old poverty program, which had been established by Lyndon Johnson. Richard Nixon wanted to bury it. That's why the piece is called The Undertaker's Tally. Rumsfeld was known on the Hill when I was there in the 1970s as the Undertaker.
We're going to take a break and return with Roger Morris. We're talking about Donald Rumsfeld, and as we continue, we'll talk about his first tour as Secretary of Defense, followed by a job as the head of the Searle Pharmaceutical Company, and then that special mission he made to meet with Saddam Hussein during the Reagan years, about 1983, that famous photo that has dogged him since then. We'll talk about that as we continue with Roger Morris. Your questions and comments, bring them on now. Toll free, 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-573-8372. You can also email me, peter@peterbcollins.com.
You're listening to KRXA 540. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
This week on Rock Rollin' Real Estate, your number one Sunday morning real estate show, we'll have Jim Ross, the president and founder of National Real Estate Holdings. Jim specializes in undervalued pre-construction real estate opportunities. That's this week on Rock Rollin' Real Estate, Sunday mornings at 10. For more information, call 408-892-3376 or visit our website, rockrollinrealestate.com. Rock Rollin' Real Estate, Sunday mornings at 10, right here on KRXA 540.
Thank you.
The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
Remember the time you almost volunteered to work in a soup kitchen? Or when you almost visited the Veterans Hospital? Or when you almost brought dinner to your neighbor with AIDS? Remember all the times you almost helped, almost gave? Well, it's only human, this almost giving. But the truth is, it's the same as not giving at all. Don't almost give, give. Visit our website at don'talmostgive.org. A message from the Ad Council.
Show. We're talking with author Roger Morris about the legacy of this guy, former Secretary of Defense twice, Donald Rumsfeld.
If someone is waiting for a so-called smoking gun, it's certain that we will have waited too long.
We don't want.
And Roger Morris, the one clip I don't have is the known, unknown, 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 unknowns.
That's one of the great quotes of American politics.
Well, I'd pay $5 for it, so if there's somebody listening who just happens to have that and you can MP3 it to me, I'll be happy to peel off a link.
We have the known knowns, the known unknowns, and the unknown unknowns.
Now, one of the unknown unknowns I want to identify here is your relationship with Tom Englehart, because at Tom Dispatch, he brings some great writers with very powerful information, and I just suspect that he's been your editor.
No, he hasn't, and I want to tell you, it's one of the nicest things that ever happened to me, and it was quite by chance. We had a mutual friend named Doug Ireland, who runs his own great website called Dyerland, former reporter for the Village Voice.
Former Mother Jones. He was a Mother Jones editor.
Tom and I have a lot of mutual friends. My publisher is Alfred Knopf, and he, of course, still works for Metropolitan and was in publishing for 30 years, but we had never known each other, and I got recommended to him, and he read the piece, which was very long for the internet in this day of really short stuff, and he loved it and just resolved to get it out there, and thank God he did. It really, really has been very widely read and very well received.
It is lengthy, but it's worth the read. I sat down last night and got through it, and I think I can recommend it to people. Go to tomdispatch.com and you can find it there right on the homepage.
Well, I just want to say about that, I know it's long, but you know, this is 40 years of history. and we didn't get here in this awful predicament that we're in any short period of time, and it's not a simple story, and we're not going to get out really without understanding it. So mm-hmm. that's why I don't apologize for the length. I just I regret it, but it's got to be tackled.
A lot of rich detail. Now, Rumsfeld was Secretary of Defense during the fleeting Ford administration, and then he returned to corporate life and was the chair of Searle, the pharmaceutical company. And the rosy history that Searle gives is that he rescued the company, and he trimmed it down, turned it around, and was a hero in their book.
Yeah, those two periods of his life are much neglected and very, very important. His first tenure as Secretary of Defense is full of some very rich history, much of which prefigures what will happen later under George W. Bush. So I would urge people to read that. It's a very bleak and dark story, and has to do really with a cover-up and refusal to face a lot of what was wrong in Vietnam, which still plagues us. But the history at Searle is really quite awful as a business history. They were involved in peddling some very suspect products, including aspartame, which has been marketed under the trade name NutraSweet, which was turned down by the FDA for some 16 years with a lot of very dubious testing and applications and so on. Finally got pushed through because of Rumsfeld's lobbying with the Reagan administration, and that whole seedy story is told there. He was billed, of course, as a business genius, and if you talk to the people who worked under him and then look at the lawsuits that were filed afterwards and all the rest, it's a very different story.
Mm-hmm. Now, how did he get selected to be a special Reagan secret envoy to the Middle East, and in particular to his special meeting with Saddam Hussein in Baghdad?
Well, of course, he was well connected with that administration. He was on the transition team. He was a long time and very bitter rival of George H.W. Bush, of the elder Bush, so he was not all that intimate in the administration, but he was called in to be this special envoy to establish a relationship with Saddam Hussein. You remember that we were, as we are now, bitterly opposed to the regime in Iran, the Ayatollah's regime, and Iraq was at war, having attacked Iran in 1980, and we wanted to slip under the table, as it were, past embargoes and all the rest, as much as we could in money and materiel to support Saddam Hussein, covertly and overtly, and Rumsfeld did just that. And the irony of that, of course, is that much of that material ended up feeding the chemical and biological warfare programs that he did have, and the beginning of his nuclear program, even though it was disbanded in the 1990s, and of course no WMDs were ever found in this invasion.
Well, and it produced the joke, which was not untrue, that the reason that Rumsfeld was so convinced that Saddam had WMD is because he gave him the damn stuff.
He had given him so much support. He made possible that program, and there are all sorts. The peace talks about the scandals here. When we first attacked Iraq in 1991 in the first Gulf War, and we bombed those facilities, the chemical and biological facilities, it set off that absolute scourge of what's called the Gulf War syndrome. Over 100,000 American troops were exposed. We still don't know all the effects there, and that chemical disaster was made possible in part by what Dom Rumsfeld was peddling in Baghdad in 1983 and 84.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I've got about a minute and 10 seconds remaining here, Roger. There's so much in the Rumsfeld bio there, but pick one little story you'd like to close with.
Well, I think his relationship with the neocons is one of the most fascinating aspects of this. He was first exposed to them during his first term as Secretary of Defense. He was very close to a senator from Washington State named Henry Scoop Jackson. You may remember him.
Sure.
Very tight with the Israeli lobby. He had a young sort of pear-shaped aide named Richard Perle, who went on to bigger and better things. Paul Wolfowitz, all the famous neocon names are there in that first Rumsfeld term, and that connection runs through time. It's a very complicated relationship, and I think it will haunt American foreign policy for a long time to come.
Yeah. And have you ever sat down with Rumsfeld?
Oh, I knew him, not well, but I certainly dealt with him when he was head of OEO. I was working as a young aide in the Senate to then Senator Walter Mondale from Minnesota, mm-hmm. and had to deal with him when he was literally decapitating, dismembering the old poverty program, one of the great tragedies of that era.
Well, that established the whole wrecking crew approach to putting people into cabinet posts whose job was to dismantle the gains that had occurred over decades preceding.
Oh, this was all a reaction, yeah, against the New Deal and all the rest, and Rumsfeld really was the undertaker in that sense.
Roger, thank you for joining us. A pleasure to talk with you, and I want to direct people to TomDispatch.com to read all about it.
Thank you.
Nice to talk with you. Coming up next, Bart Jones joins us here on the Peter B. Collins Show. He writes for Newsday, has a new book out about Hugo Chavez. We're going to talk about Venezuela. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show, produced in San Francisco by Matt Renner. Archive programs and other information at our website, peterbcollins.com.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized, attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. The Mexicali Grill is open daily for lunch from 11 to 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
Is anybody getting the hint?
This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. House Democrats have attached an amendment to the emergency funding bill, which gives the president until July 1st to certify that the Iraqi government has done enough to get the Iraqi army working, to share its oil money, and to open its constitution to amendments. And if he can't certify that kind of progress, U.S. troops must end their combat role by the end of 2007. And Mrs. Pelosi, what if he does certify progress?
If the president shows that progress is being made on July 1st, say he can certify that. That takes us to October 1st, where we want to see completion of those benchmarks. No matter what, by March 2008, the redeployment begins.
So if he certifies progress in July, he gets 3 more months to actually reach the goals, if not the pullout begins. The president has already said this is a non-starter, but I don't think he's listening closely. The Democrats are saying, Mr. President, you get to set the benchmarks for success. Also, Mr. President, you get to certify that Iraq has reached your benchmarks. Now, you could conceivably certify that Iraq hasn't reached your benchmarks, but you could also certify that it has. And there's nothing in the bill that says we challenge your certification. And if Iraq did reach your benchmarks, you could break out the mission accomplished banner and the troops would leave in triumph just in time for the primaries. We could start fresh. If civil war breaks out, we'd blame the Iraqis. It would help both parties. Please, Mr. President. Maybe it's just too subtle. Now this.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. Can a vacuum make a difference in your life? Ask anybody who owns an 8-pound Orrick XL. They'll tell you there's not an easier or more efficient way to clean your home. And it's sanitary. See for yourself risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200, 1-800-989-4200. I'll get an Orrick XL to you faster than you can say, why settle for clean when you can have healthy, too?
This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network.
Doesn't it seem that the service is lacking at most service stations? Well, not at the Karma Shell at Rio Road and the Valero at Mid-Karma Valley Shopping Center. We take care of our customers. Karma Shell is happy to pump your gas and check under your hood at your request for no extra charge. At Mid-Karma Valley Valero, we offer expert car repair at reasonable rates with a fast turnaround. We do tune-ups, brakes, safety checks, and a 26-point inspection with an oil change. We specialize in Lexus and Toyota. Our mechanic is ASE certified. Call us at 624-0722. That's 624-0722. Carmel Shell at Rio Road and Mid-Carmel Valley Valero, putting the service back in service stations.
Easy to see, people everywhere just want to be free. Listen, people, listen, that's the way it should be. Deep in the valley, people got to be free.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show. I'm glad you're listening. 33 minutes after the hour. It's a federal holiday. Schools are closed. Banks are closed. The mail's not being delivered. Bob at the Peter B. Collins Show is in live origination mode. We're working today. And if you are too, I salute you. You're welcome to call in and chat with us now or in the free speed zone next hour. Lines available, 888-5-PETER-B. That's toll free, 888-573-8372. Joining us this half hour is Bar Jones. He's a staff writer at Newsday on Long Island. He worked for 8 years in Venezuela, mostly as a foreign correspondent for the AP, the Associated Press. And he's got a book coming out called Hugo, the Hugo Chavez story from Mud Hut to Perpetual Revolution. Bart, thanks for joining us today on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Sure, Peter. Thanks for having me.
Well, I was struck by the piece that we found published last week at commondreams.org. A lot of our listeners know about that site. And it is so hard to get what I consider to be balanced coverage of the situation in Venezuela today. The corporate media in the United States has taken its cue from the Bush administration that attempted to oust Chavez by supporting a coup attempt about 5 years ago. And you cannot really get any coverage in the United States that is the least bit sympathetic to the aims, the motives, or the policies of Hugo Chavez.
Well, you bring up a point that a lot of Chavez's supporters talk about a lot. They do feel that the media coverage here in the U.S. has been very biased against him. In fact, the media watchdog group FAIR recently wrote that Hugo Chavez never had a chance with the U.S. press.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a lot of complaints along those ways.
Well, and just over the weekend, I was looking at an exchange between former Congressman Joe Kennedy and a member of Congress whose name currently escapes me, Mac. It was Mac, Connie Mack from Florida. And Kennedy had appeared in a television commercial thanking Conoco. I'm sorry, Citgo. I get my oil companies mixed up. Citgo is the oil company that is controlled by the government of Venezuela, and they don't operate in all 50 states, but they have a pretty heavy market penetration along the eastern seaboard. And the last two winters, Citgo has been selling below-market heating oil to low-income families along the East Coast. And so Joe Kennedy appeared in this commercial thanking Citgo for doing this voluntarily. I don't know of any other oil company that has lowered its prices to help middle and low-income people through the huge spike in costs of the last few years. And so for that, Congressman Mack slammed Kennedy and basically said that, you know, he was aiding and abetting an enemy. And I, at this point, do not know that the United States considers Venezuela an enemy. There's certainly no love lost between the administrations, but as an American citizen, I don't consider Venezuela an enemy.
Right. Well, you know, there's been a lot of heated rhetoric, obviously, around Chavez, and people like Congressman Mack do view him almost as an enemy of the U.S. He's pretty much said that. You know, I think from Joe Kennedy's point of view, he's getting, you know, cheap oil for poor people up here in the U.S., and, you know, whether it comes from Hugo Chavez or anyone else, that's not really his concern. You know, obviously the U.S. also does a lot of business with countries such as Saudi Arabia, which are not exactly democratic countries. I think there's a lot of debate about Chavez. You mentioned earlier about the balanced coverage, and, you know, he's pretty much been painted as a dictator up here in the U.S. media. And my own take on that is that that's a little bit simplistic. If you look at really the definition of what a dictatorship is and kind of go down the list of items, you know, is there a free press in Venezuela? Well, there certainly is. I mean, this is a media where people go on television and say just about anything they want about Hugo Chavez, even calling for coups against him on television.
Well, he also has his own weekly show, which is a bit unusual.
He does. He's got a weekly television and radio show that goes on for a number of hours every Sunday, although they're changing the format, I think, to each night during the week now.
Oh, yeah?
He's just beginning that this week.
He's going wall to wall?
Well, I think they're not going to do it on Sundays. I think they're going to do it maybe Monday through Friday night.
Mas Hugo.
he is a talker. I mean, he will go on for hours and hours, and his opponents and kind of the upper-class people that really despise him, that drives them crazy. Mm-hmm. But his supporters in the barrios really like it, and they love to listen to Chavez talk. He's really a great communicator. Mm-hmm. I mean, even his enemies will concede that point, that he really knows how to connect with people down there.
We're talking with Bart Jones from Newsday. Excuse me, Bart. And one of the recent episodes that most Americans know about was the speech that Hugo Chavez gave at the United Nations this past September. And I have to say, Bart, that I was not offended by it while there was, you know, great umbrage and harumping in the corporate media in this country because he got up there and referred to the fact that Bush had given a speech from the same podium a day before. And he said the devil had been here, and he said it smells like sulfur. Now, that's the part that I think can't be proven, the sulfur part.
Right. Well, you know, I mean, again, Chavez's performance at the UN was controversial. Some people certainly felt it was over the top. And, you know, frankly, it's debatable whether it helped him or not. I mean, even some people that were generally sympathetic toward Chavez thought it was a little bit too much.
But it was a joke. You know, he didn't take his shoe off and pound it on the table. He didn't do a John Bolton. He told a joke. I thought it was a joke.
Right. Well, you know, I mean, people that like Chavez, you know, many of them liked it, and many people thought he was saying what other leaders were thinking but were afraid to say. But, you know, I have to say, I think it, whether you personally or I personally liked it or not, I think it did kind of hurt him in ways because even some supporters, even some of those folks in that oil program actually said, you know, I don't like George Bush, but I thought that was a little bit too much. So, you know, he does say things that set people off and provoke a lot of controversy, and that's kind of one of his hallmarks.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's talk about something you mentioned in the article, which is the future of RCTV in Venezuela. This is the network that supported the attempted coup, and it's run by some of the wealthy folks who are part of the old guard in Venezuela. And Chavez has notified them that they're going to lose their license later this year, I think in May. Is this a heavy-handed effort that we might attribute to Vladimir Putin to silence critics, or is this a legitimate crackdown on an out-of-control oppositional outlet?
Well, you know, I think the case of Radio Caracas Television, you know, it's really been portrayed in the media up here as a crackdown on free speech down there. And I know the owner of the station wrote a long article for the Wall Street Journal pretty much saying that. I think it's a lot more complicated. This is a television station which supported the coup in 2002. It encouraged people to attend this march against Chavez. It basically blacked out all coverage of his supporters when they went into the streets demanding that he be returned to the presidency after he had been kidnapped. So this is really a television station which, if it was operating in the United States, I don't really think would last more than a few minutes for the FCC. It's hard to make the case that, and Chavez in this particular case is trying to shut down the free press. This television station has gone way beyond the normal kind of activities that any television station in the United States would be legally allowed to carry out.
Mm-hmm. Now, Bart, on that particular story, I don't know enough to, you know, really substitute my own judgment, but I get the sense that this is a reasonable response by the Chavez government to take the license away from RCTV. And I'm not offended by his avowed socialist policies. I also am not particularly offended by his relationship with Cuba, Castro, and some of the other regimes of the world that aren't accepted by Washington. But I have to say I am concerned by the recent legislation that permits him to rule by decree for an 18-month period. What's behind that, and is this a power grab that puts him on track to become a dictator?
Well, you know, there is a lot of controversy around that. I mean, well, I think the Radio Caracas television station move is really pretty clear. You know, this is certainly something that people probably need to keep their eye on. You know, is Chavez going a little too far with this? His supporters, I guess, are saying that this is something that's been done before in Venezuela as well as other countries throughout Latin America. It's not the first time it's happened. It's limited. It only applies to certain aspects of the country's activities, and it can actually be overturned by the National Assembly down there or by a referendum by the citizens that they could carry out. So that's what his supporters would say, but I have to say I also know some of his supporters contend that they don't really understand why he's doing this either, and they themselves are kind of concerned about it. So there are certainly, you know, kind of a couple of red flags out there to look for with Chavez. That would be one of them. He's also talking about kind of perpetual re-election as president. That would be another one. So, you know, it's a mixed bag. I think, though, to say that he's a dictator at this point, I think is going a little bit too far. But there are some warning signs to certainly keep an eye on.
Bart Jones writes in this piece, likewise, Chavez is not creating a single-party state as widely reported, but is melding together an amorphous array of parties that support him. He is not outlawing opposition parties. He has no need to, as he showed when he glided to a record landslide victory in the December 5th presidential vote with a 63-37% margin in what appears to be a free and fair election. Bart, with that in mind, why does he need these powers to rule by decree? He doesn't have an oppositional assembly, does he?
No, he doesn't. I mean, and it's a legitimate question. Why does he need the decree powers? All of his supporters actually control the entire National Assembly due to the fact that in December of 2005, in the elections, the opposition basically boycotted it. And so they kind of got what they wanted also. They can now say, hey, look, he's a dictator. His supporters control the entire National Assembly. So it is a legitimate question. Why does he need these powers? I don't know if he's explained it completely himself. It may be to kind of fast-track some items through that he thinks need to be really pushed, cutting back on corruption, cutting back on bureaucracy, that type of thing. But, you know, it was definitely a controversial move, and people, even some supporters, are kind of wondering about it.
Mm-hmm. All right. We're going to take a break and return with Bart Jones. He writes for Newsday. He's got a book coming out later this year called Hugo, The Hugo Chavez Story, From Mud Hut to Perpetual Revolution. When's it due out, Bart?
It's due out on September 4th through Steerforth Press, and on their website they'll have all the information.
Okay, Steerforth?
Steerforth, yes. Steer is an S-T-E-E-R and F-O-R-T-H, Steerforth Press up in New Hampshire.
Very good. We're going to continue in just a moment. If you have a question or comment about the Chavez government and the situation in Venezuela, bring it on right now. Toll free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. We'll continue in a moment right here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
You're listening to KRXA 540.
One Day Income Tax Service, family owned and operated since 1944, specializes in year-round professional tax preparation. Do you want your refund quickly? Stop by One Day Income Tax Service. They offer tax preparation at reasonable rates and work to meet the needs of military families with the capacity to process all out-of-state returns. If you prefer to prepare your own return at home, they can help you expedite your refund by filing your return electronically. Let One Day Income Tax Service assist you with your return and maximize your refund. Stop by 885 Broadway Avenue in Seaside, where no appointment is necessary. Looking for quick, professional, and reasonable tax return preparation? Visit One Day Income Tax Service, 885 Broadway Avenue, Seaside, or call 394-8010. That's 831-394-8010.
One Day Income Tax Service, where you walk in with a copy of your most recent tax return, personal ID, and W-2 1099 info for 2006, and you walk out with your completed tax return.
For over 30 years, I have been helping people restore their skin's natural beauty. This is Claudie Assalit of Claudie Skincare Studio in Carmel. I bring a certain je ne sais quoi, as well as 3 decades of experience in top spas and salons. Claudie Skincare Studio features a selection of the finest products, and I am always training to stay at the cutting edge of skincare technology. At Claudie Skincare Studio, we specialize in healing facials, peels, Reiki, waxing, lash tinting, as well as nutritional advice to ensure your skin vibrancy and good health. To set up an appointment, call me Claudie Assalit at 625-4101. That is 625-4101. Smooth, soft, beautiful skin can be yours. Call 625-4101. A bientôt.
Had a very pleasant good afternoon to you. Let's take a look at the very latest and tell you that we do have a little bit of activity. LCHP telling us that Highway 1 in Santa Cruz southbound, the Morrissey Boulevard on-ramp, the on- and off-ramp, still shut down 24 hours a day. Other than that, not a whole lot of other activity, but we are going to tell you about something happening in the Santa Clara Lawrence Expressway at Homestead. We have an accident working there. 2 vehicles. What about Highway 17? Well, so far, the commute looking pretty good. In fact, it's really moving at the speed limit in both directions. However, I want to mention that it does appear southbound 1 reports of slow traffic between Monterey and Carmel. Eastbound 24 does slow out of Gilroy into Hollister. A diet rich in natural antioxidants is good for your heart, and Welch's 100% grape juice is loaded with them. To help protect your heart, drink Welch's 100% grape juice.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show. Our guest is journalist Bart Jones. He writes for Newsday. He was an AP correspondent in Venezuela for most of an 8-year period when he lived there. And he has a new book due out in September, Hugo, the Hugo Chavez Story. We're live here on the Peter B. Collins Show here on President's Holiday. Dave joins us from Eureka with a question or comment. Hello, Dave. You're on the air.
Hey, Peter. For how many years now have we been hearing about the hated dictator of Cuba, Fidel Castro? But reality is, we're talking about a president that walks about with his people wearing a private uniform and no security guards. And how many millions and millions of people in the world are homeless? None of them are Cuban. All of them have medical care. All of them have food. And I think it is the cons here that are trying to take from the poorest of people that want not to see any such example out there as another Fidel Castro. Hugo Chavez, I think, is somebody that's going to act in the interests of his people and try to improve their plight.
Well, I'll just tag on to that, Dave, that we are using the same brilliant policies that successfully isolated and debilitated the Castro regime against Hugo Chavez right now. And basically, it just backfires on us. Castro has been able to use the U.S. as a boogeyman to maintain his grip on power, you know, despite many serious economic setbacks and really not quite the death, but major changes in the communist system that he embraced so happily in 1959 and 1960. And my point is that the U.S. is repeating these errors by essentially attempting to isolate Chavez and force him into the arms of less friendly governments, including some who are a clear opposition or enemies like Tehran. Bart, do you have a comment?
I agree with you on that point that the U.S. Really is repeating the mistakes it made in Cuba with Chavez. It's kind of interesting because early on when Chavez first won the presidency, Clinton was still in office, and they had a much different policy. They had an engagement policy with Chavez, and it was known for the famous phrase by the ambassador John Maisto, you know, watch what he does, don't listen to what he says. And they really had a much different approach. When Bush came into office, he actually brought into power a lot of the Iran-Contra figures, such as Otto Reich. And they completely changed that policy. They made it much more hardline. And since that time, we've seen a real deterioration in relations. So I think it's I think it's exactly really repeating the same pattern we saw with Cuba.
And it does strengthen the support he gets from his own people.
Well, it does. I mean, he now campaigns, part of his campaign is saying, you know, this is all about George Bush, this vote. So, you know, vote against the empire. So it really plays right into his hands.
Dave, anything else you want to add?
Well, if Pat Robinson and his ilk there think that he needs to be assassinated, I think I like this guy.
Well put, Dave. Thank you very much. Now, that is a bizarre episode, isn't it? I mean, to have a preacher on television counsel the assassination of a foreign leader?
Well, it was really quite amazing, and what Chavez said after that is that how come nothing happened to this guy? Why did Robinson simply walk the streets free after that? If someone did that in the United States, saying that about George Bush, they would probably have the Secret Service at their door within a few minutes and face some real consequences. And yet it seems that when people say that about Hugo Chavez, it's accepted.
Well, and I don't want to impugn the faith of Christians, but it's just so unchristian for a guy like Pat Robertson to go on TV and start talking about taking out a foreign leader. It is quite bizarre. I wanted to turn to another set of questions, Bart, and that is that we know that Chavez won re-election pretty healthily with a 67% margin last year. But many people don't know that the same pollsters who worked for Bill Clinton and who are now working on the Hillary Rodham Clinton for President campaign supported the opponent of Hugo Chavez and did the polling, created television messaging for the opponent. And it's Mark Penn who was the leader of that polling team in Venezuela.
Yeah, well, there was a lot of controversy surrounding him and his work. And when Chavez faced the recall referendum back in 2004, that particular firm was announcing results the night of the election, even though that was illegal. No one was supposed to release exit polls. But they did so, and they actually had a poll that came out showing the exact opposite results of what the real results were, and they had Chavez losing by a huge amount. This created all kinds of problems, and it really led the opposition into believing that they had won, and then subsequently, obviously yelling fraud. So I think many people would say that their work down there has been very controversial, and we saw some of the same things this past December when Chavez ran again. You began to see some of these polls saying, oh, it's neck and neck, we really don't know who's going to win, when in reality, Chavez won in a huge landslide. It was actually 63-37%. He got two-thirds of the vote. So any pollster who was coming in there and saying that this race was too close to call, you have to wonder what was going on there.
Yeah. It's highly suggestive. I'll leave it at that. Now, it's not all rosy for President Chavez in Venezuela, even if we put aside the external threats and some of the challenges to his consolidation of power. Inflation is a problem. The poor are being ravaged by price hikes on basic staples. I think the cost of chicken went up 40% last week. And despite the flush profits from oil revenues that have produced huge imports of automobiles and scotch, and the upper class in Venezuela is doing very well. But inflation is a serious problem, and he's having a tough time managing it all, isn't he?
Well, you know, there is certainly some inflation down there now, and I think some economists would say that that's partly due to all the money flowing into the country. There's just huge amounts, billions of dollars coming in with the oil money. So it certainly has created some inflation. I think Chavez is trying to take some steps to control that. You know, whether that's going to be successful or not remains to be seen. Things are not completely rosy down there. He's doing what he can. But there are some real intractable problems down there. I mean, the corruption is really a way of life down there. And, you know, Venezuelans often kind of see people who have an opportunity to grab something and who don't do it. They kind of refer to them as fools. So Chavez is really dealing with some kind of deep-rooted cultural problems, I think, that he has to overcome. And that's one of them, and the bureaucracy is also another major problem that he faces down there.
Mm-hmm.
These are not things you solve overnight. And he's made limited success in some of these areas. I think even some of his supporters would say he needs to go a lot harder after the corruption, for instance.
Well, and it appears that his electoral victories have produced full employment for the Chavez family. His father is the governor of the state of Venezuela that Hugo hails from. His brother is the mayor of the hometown that he grew up in. And another brother is a major confidant who I believe has been the point man in relations with Cuba.
Well, that's right. And, you know, it's funny because there was a New York Times article yesterday, you may have seen, about his family,
mm-hmm.
kind of implying that they're, you know, assuming all this power and there's this corruption going on and all these kind of fishy things going on. And yet they didn't really seem to have much proof about it. They, you know, they spoke about how his mother now appears in newspaper photographs in, you know, designer clothes and holding her pet poodle, as if this was evidence that there was some kind of nefarious activity going on.
Yeah.
I mean, there may well be, and if there is, I think it should be reported on, but they didn't really seem to have much evidence other than his mother's pet poodle and things like that.
Well, I agree with you, Brent. I think, Bart, that's a very good point. I read the same article and came away saying it suggests things, but it doesn't actually prove anything. Well, Bart, thank you for your commentary today, and I appreciate you joining us. We'll look forward to the publication of your book, and we'll invite you back after that to talk more about Hugo Chavez.
Okay, thanks very much, Peter.
That's Bart Jones. He writes for Newsday and his new book, Hugo, The Hugo Chavez Story from Mud Hut to Perpetual Revolution, coming out in the fall. The Free Speech Zone is next. Hillary Clinton, is she wrong and strong? I want to hear your views at 1-888-5-PETER-B.
Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand Avenue is your one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, liquors, and beers at very reasonable prices. Let PG Liquors knowledgeable owner J.R. Medina and his son-in-law Chad help you choose the ideal Monterey regional or imported wine for any occasion, from an intimate dinner with that special someone to a formal affair with dozens or even hundreds of guests. If you're looking for distilled spirits, PG Liquors specializes in the finest blue agave tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and top-shelf vodkas, including Northern California's own Hangar One. Beer lovers from Carmel to Marina, beat a path to PG Liquors, which boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales, lagers, stouts, porters, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand, just above Lighthouse, the outlet for all of your beverage needs.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Phil Whitney. President Bush has arrived in Montevideo, Uruguay, just across the River Plata in Buenos Aires, Argentina, a big anti-Bush rally.
Gringo! Go home!
The star attraction was Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez, who's shadowing Mr. Bush during his Latin America tour. The first stop was Sao Paulo, where the United States and Brazil today signed an agreement to work together developing biofuels. CBS News correspondent Peter Mayer reports.
The White House acknowledges this is an image-building trip to a region that senses U.S. neglect. But President Bush appeared to be agitated when a Brazilian reporter suggested he has ignored this part of the world.
And so the characterization that our back has been turned is not borne out by the facts. It may be a perception.
The president calls it a goodwill visit. But there was no goodwill near his hotel as protesters burned an American flag and shouted, "Bush, get out."
FBI Director Robert Mueller says it's his fault that agents overstepped the authority of the Patriot Act.
I should have provided the appropriate training, education, and internal oversight so that all out there, all in the field, understood the use of these authorities, and I did not.
Not only did the FBI misuse the Patriot Act to obtain personal information on thousands of people, a Justice Department audit found it also underreported uses of the Patriot Act to Congress. In Iraq, the leader of an insurgent group with links to al-Qaeda has reportedly been captured. The Iraqi military says Abu Omar al-Baghdadi was found during a raid in the Abu Ghraib area on the western outskirts of the capital. His group, called Islamic State of Iraq, has claimed responsibility for a series of major attacks. Nearly 500,000 Chrysler vehicles are being recalled. Company spokesman Max Gates says there is an electrical problem in some Dodge Durangos. Brand new Dodge Avengers have defective door latches, and the air conditioning in some Jeep Liberties could fail. Owners with problems shouldn't wait.
The Durango, if you see your interior lights aren't
functioning the way they should. Obviously, with the Avenger, if your front doors don't close properly, and with the Jeep Liberty, if you are smelling any kind of an odor or anything that indicates that there might be some overheating in the vehicle, they should go and take your vehicle into your dealer right away, even though you haven't received your letter yet.
Time has come to make the switch to daylight saving time. In an effort to save energy, most of the country will set clocks ahead 1 hour at 2 a.m. Sunday. Just be advised, because we're doing this earlier than usual, some electronic devices might not reset themselves automatically. Even though winter weather held down construction hiring, the Labor Department says the unemployment rate fell to 4.5% last month, down from 4.6 in January. The Dow gained 15 points today, finishing the week at 12,276. The Nasdaq was down a fraction. This is CBS News.
This is Charles Osgood of the Osgood File. Is orange juice part of your morning routine? I switched to Welch's 100% grape juice because it has twice the antioxidant power of orange juice. You may have heard a diet naturally rich in antioxidants is good for you. Not only does drinking Welch's 100% grape juice help promote a healthy heart, but emerging research suggests it may help to protect memory and brain health as well. And it's nice to know Welch's is made from Concord grapes grown right here in America by Welch's farmer owners. So drink Welch's 100% grape juice for an unmistakably delicious way to add antioxidants to your diet. This is Charles Osgood. See you on the Osgood File.
Brenda Coates is a real GEICO customer, not a paid celebrity. So to help tell her story, we hired Mr. Burt Bacharach.
Last year, I was rear-ended by a GEICO customer.
I was hit in the rear.
First thought in my mind was about that funny lizard.
Lizard licks his eyeball.
I was so impressed with how they handled my claim, I switched.
I hope I'll never get hit in the rear again.
GEICO. Real service, real savings.
Confronted with a fire in his home, a young man in Chandler, Arizona, was either incredibly calm or incredibly numb. KFYI Radio's Ted Houston has the story.
The sheriff's office says 19-year-old Jonathan Zalatell was cooking meth in a toaster oven.
The toaster oven caught fire and started to set the rest of his apartment on fire.
Deputy Doug Madison says Zalatell tried to put out the fire with water. When that didn't work, he tried spraying window cleaner. That didn't work either, so he left and drove to Walmart to buy a fire extinguisher before heading back home.
He arrived to see firemen putting his fire out and also sheriff's office there.
Zalatell was arrested on numerous charges. Ted Houston for CBS News, Chandler, Arizona.
Last week's tornadoes in the South killed people as they demolished everything in their path, and we're learning now that they scattered debris far and wide. A canceled check from Enterprise, Alabama, landed at a farm between Plains and America's Georgia, more than 100 miles away. Apparently, it was carried all that way by the wind. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
And now for the bonus round. What is the molecular number of tapioca pudding?
32.
Correct. If today is yesterday's tomorrow, what is Sunday?
Slightly overcast.
Correct. About how many movies has Netflix delivered so far?
Over 1 billion.
Correct! Netflix! Over 1 billion movies delivered so far. Zero late fees. Choose movies online and get DVDs delivered to your door in about one business day. Start your free trial. Plans now from only $4.99 a month. Netflix, it's that easy.
Order in the court.
It's time to render your decision. You've made up your mind, but you're twitching from the itching, squirming from the burning, and everyone's hanging on your every word.
I should have used Preparation H. Quick recess.
Where's he going?
You should carry Preparation H portable wipes, the discreet way to get big relief. They're convenient little packets that hold very big wipes, so you can cleanse, cool, and soothe to get relief even when you're not at home.
Order. Now, my decision.
Preparation H portable wipes. Big relief to go. Use as directed.
We continue now on the Peter B. Collins Show. Coming up later this hour, Richard Rappaport gets ready for a showdown with Chris Hansen, the guy who puts those perverted justice segments on TV. We'll tell you more about that in about half an hour.
Under the skyway, I saw below me a golden valley. Yeah, this land was made.
But first, I'm admiring those skin-tight jeans that you're wearing. Are those designer jeans? Like $150 or more? Chances are they were made in a sweatshop in China by people making 6 cents an hour.
Yeah.
We're joined this half hour by Mika Peled, P-E-L-E-D. He's producer and director of a powerful new film called China Blue, and it will be on PBS later this year. It's at the Roxy Film Center in San Francisco, opening later this week, and also the Rafael Film Center in San Rafael, both in the San Francisco area. Mika Peled, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hi, and thanks for pronouncing my name correctly.
Well, I actually called Karen Larson to double-check.
Good for you. Most people don't do the homework.
And also, as I read through the details of the package, I said, aha, Media Alliance.
Yes.
Our paths have crossed, Mika. I once participated in a summer study program in Prague that was put together by Media Alliance. Peter Laufer, my colleague, spearheaded that. And
yes, I remember the program very well, and Peter Laufer was a great guy. Wonder whatever happened to him.
Oh, he's still around. I haven't talked to him since about an hour ago.
Well, next time you talk to him, please give him my best.
I sure will, yeah.
Tell him to come and see my film.
Well, I will. And if he won't do that, I have a DVD sneak copy, and I'll pass it along to him.
But let's tell your listeners why they should also go and see the film.
Well, I will. And it's a powerful story focused on a woman named Jasmine. Tell us about Jasmine and how you came into contact with her and were able to profile her.
Jasmine is 16 years old. She's from a small village in the heart of China in the province of Sichuan. And like all people her age in villages in China, she has to leave the village to go and get a job to help the family. There are millions of kids of that age. And in fact, usually they leave at the age of 14 because that's when most of them finish middle school. There's no employment in the villages, and so they all leave home and usually spend a couple of days on a train ride to get somewhere where there are factories that hire them. They stay in these factories for a few years. They live in dormitories inside the compounds of the factories in terrible conditions. When people see my film, they feel that this is slavery of the modern age.
Yeah.
And we all sort of know that the workers of China are, not treated very well. But once you see the film, it becomes unacceptable because now you know Jasmine and you like her. She keeps a journal. She has imagination. She writes little stories. Her friends are all in the same condition. That's basically how the clothes that we buy get made, how the toys, the shoes that we buy, everything.
Well, this is not isolated. We learned that the Marianas Islands, which are nominally a U.S. possession and which permit the sweatshops there to put a Made in USA label on the garments they produce, have similar conditions. And you know, these are almost labor camps.
That's right.
Comes down to a forced labor situation. At the end of a year, Jasmine may net some money, but as you describe, the employers are predatory. They have forced overtime that in some cases requires them to work more than 24 hours straight to try to meet a deadline for the boss. And then they have to live in these, calling it a dormitory. I mean, I've been to San Quentin, Mika, and these are just slightly better than that because not every room is barred. But they're jammed in. They have very little privacy. And the company town structure that people might remember from Gold Rush America is alive and well there because they get deductions from their paychecks.
That's right.
When they get paid, they get deductions for their food, for the room and board. And so at the end of it, the only people who really make out are the exploitative owners.
Well, wait a minute. The owners are somewhere in the middle of the food chain. At the top of this food chain that we call globalization are the international retailers mm-hmm. that go in there and place the orders.
Very good point.
And my film shows a scene like that. We were able to get a scene of the owner negotiating with the buyer. This one happens to be from England, but it's all the same. And he demands a lower price. And the only way that the owner could afford to not lose on this order is by reducing the labor cost. That's the only thing in his cost that he can play with. So in order to be competitive as a factory owner in China, you cannot pay even the minimum wage of China. You cannot pay overtime. You must have workers around the clock, including Sunday, because that's the demands of the retailers that come in there. And they're so powerful, you know, with our credit card buying power.
Yep. And so as you look at this picture, first of all, what drew you into it? This was a very difficult assignment. In the next segment, I want you to tell us a little bit about the challenges you faced making a film in China.
Yeah.
But what drew you into it, Mika Pellet?
Well, it started with my previous film, which is called Star Wars.
Yeah, about Walmart.
Walmart Comes to Town.
Mm-hmm.
Which looked at Walmart's impact on a small town in Virginia that's fighting to keep them off. And that got me thinking about the other end of the same stories, where do these cheap goods come from and how they get made. And, you know, frankly, to me, the issue of globalization is sort of the overarching theme of our times. You know, in the last couple of years, we've been, unfortunately, focused on Iraq and the news. But I think if not for Iraq, we would be focusing on our relations with China and then what's going on with the global economy and so forth. And those issues are hard to discuss because they're complicated, they're abstract, it's not easy to see who is the bad guy. And I've been trying to bring in stories from the globalization front.
Mm-hmm. Well, going back to the early 1990s, it was interesting because the woman who's now Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, as a member of Congress, mm-hmm. was participating in this annual debate over most favored nation status for China.
Yes.
And the focus was primarily on human rights, and certainly worker rights were a portion of that, but probably more focused on political rights mm-hmm. than worker issues. Still, that was a robust annual debate where these issues were aired out and brought to light. And during the Clinton administration, despite what happened in 89 at Tiananmen Square, they went for what they called constructive engagement with China,
right.
arguing that economic relationships would force China into more humane treatment of its citizens, both politically and socially. What is your take on constructive engagement?
Well, it's just another PR glossy term. And by the way, the European Union is not any better than the United States on this one. I think that whole theory that, you know, if you put a McDonald's there, then they're going to let their citizens vote has been proved to just be a fallacy by now. In China, you have capitalism running amok, but there's no freedom of speech. And workers not only are not allowed to organize, but anybody who's trying to organize them is sent to jail.
Mm-hmm.
They still have in China hundreds of these camps that are for, re-education through labor. If you're caught trying to organize your fellow workers to on a strike, let's say, you could be sent to one of those without any trial. You don't have a right to defend yourself or to attend a hearing. You just, boom, the next day you're there for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
China has signed a lot of international treaties that guarantee their workers' right to organize, but it completely ignores it.
And what about Walmart agreeing to permit unionization in China? On the face of it, that was a pretty interesting story.
Well, Walmart didn't suddenly develop a soft heart. Walmart doesn't have a heart. No corporation has a heart. They basically, first of all, have no choice. China is obviously the largest growth market in the world. They want to be major players there. They've had the stores in China now for quite some time. It's premature to tell what will happen there. It's interesting that the Chinese suddenly insist that Walmart allows union when they don't allow unions in their own factories.
Sure, they shut down a store in Quebec or Ontario
yes.
because the employees had formed a union.
Because that's a real union. Now, what happens in China is, you know, the Chinese have a puppet government-sponsored workers' union. And as long as that's all it's going to be, all these guys do is they organize like an annual picnic for the workers.
Oh, I see.
You know, they don't go into collective bargaining.
Mm-hmm. So it's more like membership in the Communist Party.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I'm sure all the Walmart top executives in China are members of the party if they're Chinese citizens, you know.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Mika Pellet, producer-director of this new film, China Blue. As we mentioned, it's at the Roxy Film Center, a center in San Francisco, opening later this week. Also, the Rafael Film Center in San Rafael. And the materials don't specify a PBS air date, but it says 2007. Have you nailed that down yet?
Yeah, there is an air date, which is April 3rd at 10:30 p.m., but the PBS version is a lot shorter.
Mm-hmm.
It's 53 minutes, and we lose a great character, Orchid, who dances and does fashion shows and has a boyfriend, and the whole love story goes out the door. And so it's much better for people to come and see it in the cinema.
Very good. We're going to take a break and return. If you'd like to talk with Mika Pellett, if you'd like to talk about sweatshops, about the kind of labor that is exploited in China, feel free to call us. Lines open right now at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show.
KRXA 540, progressive talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. You're listening to the new KRXA 540. You're listening to KRXA 540. KRXA 540, progressive talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. You're listening to the new KRXA 540. You're listening to KRXA 540. KRXA 540, progressive talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. You're listening to the new KRXA 540. KRXA 540, progressive talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. You're listening to KRXA 540. You're listening to the new KRXA 540. KRXA 540, progressive talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. You're listening to the new KRXA 540. You're listening to KRXA 540. KRXA 540, progressive talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. You're listening to the new KRXA 540. You're listening to KRXA 540. KRXA 540, progressive talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. You're listening to the new KRXA 540.
Yeah.
continue now on the Peter B. Collins Show. Coming up just after the half hour, about 10 minutes away, Richard Rappaport returns. He's doing a radio showdown with Chris Hansen from NBC about these dreadful, predatory news segments they do, where they have somebody entrap a guy on the internet by posing as a 14-year-old girl, and when he shows up for the sex party, they arrest him and capture it all on videotape. And Rappaport's going to face Hansen tomorrow on NPR's Talk of the Nation. On the PBC show, we do honor middle initials. Mika X. Pellet is our guest, and he is the producer and director of China Blue, a powerful documentary about sweatshop garment factories in China. And if you'd like to join us, lines available at 888-5-PETER-B. We're joined by Sheldon in Arizona. Hello, Sheldon. You're on the air.
Hello, Peter B.
Hi.
Hey, I appreciate the work that guy does, exposing basically these globalists that take advantage of everybody and then pass it on like there's nothing wrong with it. You know, it's funny how, you remember back a few years ago, and when I was a kid, you know, communism was like the greatest threat ever. You know, Reagan was, oh my God, communists, you gotta stop it, it's going crazy, you know, and everybody was all freaked out. But now it's like, okay. Because they make cheap DVD players. You know, it's funny. They sit there and bash Cuba for being communist, too. But then we do all this trade and everything with China and just overlook it. It's absolutely ridiculous.
Not only the trade, a huge trade deficit, then in essence, makes China our lead banker as the Bush administration continues its credit binge, the borrow and spend routine. Mika, your comment?
Well, we are unfortunately not in the position right now to stop doing business with China. We couldn't afford to for the very reason you just mentioned, Peter. You know, we owe them too much money. Just imagine if tomorrow the president of China decides on, you know, a very modest policy shift, which if he announces from this day on, we are going to enforce our own labor laws. Nothing more than that. Sounds very reasonable. But that would mean that so many of our commodities will, prices will go up. It'll be a huge, you know, earthquake in the economy just for that alone. So, you know, we have given up our ability to really influence what goes on there as a country a long time ago, but not as consumers. Because, the largest, most powerful corporations in the world, like Walmart, would not exist if we weren't, you know, giving them our money. And so what I would like to see is that consumers send a very clear message to these retailers saying, give us some clothes that we won't feel guilty buying.
Mm-hmm.
It shouldn't work this way. We don't need people on the other side of the world to work all night long, to work for a fraction of the minimum wage in their own countries just to produce our clothes.
Yeah.
Well,
Sheldon?
That's what's scary, because what we're doing in America, we have to realize this. We're living in a fraud. This economy is a fraud. What you think is they use this China and this cheap labor to cover up the problems with the dollar.
Oh, Sheldon, you simply don't appreciate the brilliance of it. They're using Enron accounting. And the way Enron put its losses in these offshore corporations named for Star Wars films, the Bush administration has offshored our debt to China and a few other countries. It's brilliant.
It's scary because look, you're so right, but we're so close on the edge. They got us exactly where they want us, these globalists, because everybody depends on everybody. If one thing tweaks out of whack, just think if we quit, we got China by the you know what too, in a way, because if something happens to our economy, guess what happens to theirs? Their textiles and everything doesn't work either.
All right.
What they're trying to do, Sheldon, the problem is these companies, once we don't have any power at all, because mm-hmm. the rest of the world is buying, then America is done. They don't even care. It's kind of like an employee that makes, you know, $5 an hour. They go, well, whatever, we'll just get somebody else.
All right, thanks for your...
The rest,
Sheldon, okay. Thanks for coming. I'm just
Thank
tight
you.
For time here. And Mika, I wanted to give you a chance, just about a minute and a half here, to describe the difficulties you faced making a film in China. You had to smuggle your DV cam in parts.
Yeah, well, you know, we're talking about China being capitalist, but they're still completely controlled. Media there, it's a totalitarian country. If you apply for a permit to make a film, they will have somebody from the propaganda department with you from the moment you arrive. And so we went as tourists. We had our main camera taken apart and somebody crossing the border each time and reassembling it inside China. And that's how we brought the footage out. I had numerous run-ins with the police. I had my crew arrested, tapes confiscated. Because of that, it took us 3 years to make this film. But I'm happy that it's out. And I just want to say the film is in 16 cinemas around the country. And if people in other parts of the country want to know if it's someone near them, please come to our website, which is teddybearfilms.com.
Teddybearfilms.com. And do you know if it's on in Arizona in the coming weeks?
I'm afraid not yet.
Okay. Well, if that happens, alert us, and we'll pass the word to our listeners in Phoenix.
Excellent.
Well, Mika, thank you for making the film. Thanks for joining us today, and appreciate all your work, including what you've done with Media Alliance.
Thank you, Peter.
You've been on the front lines for many years.
Good to talk to you. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Coming up next, as I mentioned, Richard Rappaport returns. He debuted this article on our program about 3 weeks back, and now it's in wide circulation. If you want to check it out, go to commondreams.org or many other websites. And it's about this NBC television show and a couple of others that prey on would-be perverts, would-be pedophiles, and entrap them. And then when they expect a girl to show up to have sex with them, a big tall guy named Chris Hansen comes out with cameras rolling. I think it's perverted, and we'll talk about it coming up next. Your comments are welcome at 888-5-PETER-B. Our program is produced in San Francisco by Matt Renner. Visit our website, peterbcollins.com.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Pacific Grove Liquors is the one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, spirits, and beers at very reasonable prices. Whether you seek the ideal California or imported wine, quality distilled spirits like top shelf tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and premium vodkas, PG Liquors is your beverage outlet. Love beer? PG Liquors boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales and lagers, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand your wine, beer, and liquor store.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
Have you thought about owning more real estate but don't know where to turn? Are you interested in learning how to make good profit buying and selling real estate? Or do you want to learn how to let your tenants pay the mortgage while you enjoy the equity? If you want to learn the ins and outs of real estate investing, listen to The Real Estate Guys, Sunday nights at 5 on KRXA. You can own more real estate. The Real Estate Guys will show you how. Listen Sunday nights at 5 and on the web at realestateguysradio.com.
It's tax time again. And there's one progressive tax preparer in the Monterey Bay Area who specializes in tax returns for W-2 and self-employed working people. Jim Moore Income Tax specializes in preparing tax returns that maximize your refund as soon as you need it. In 24 hours, 2 weeks, or 3 weeks, the choice is yours. The personnel at Jim Moore Income Tax have been helping the hardworking Spanish-speaking residents of the Central Coast with immigration and tax preparation services for more than 30 years. You can get your tax return professionally prepared and electronically filed by bilingual tax professionals at a very reasonable fee. Need your tax return tomorrow? Visit the office of Jim Moore Income Tax today, located at 30 Alexander Street in downtown Watsonville, just two blocks from the Central Plaza. Be sure to take a copy of your 2005 federal and California returns and W-2 1099 info for 2006. Need your tax refund tomorrow? Visit the office of Jim Moore Income Tax today at 30 Alexander Street, downtown Watsonville.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service now has three locations to serve you better wherever you live. All three locations feature full service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or, in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
specializing in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for friendly, fast, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service. Now located in Santa Cruz at 1807 Soquel Avenue across from Walgreens, in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road and Soquel Drive, and now in Aptos Village across the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Call 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service full service.
Hi, this is Scott Dick, your host of the Tasty Planet Radio Show. Every Saturday from 1 to 4 p.m., I explore the world of food, wine, and travel across the U.S. and around the world. I interview authors, chefs, winemakers, restaurateurs, brewers, and others that make our world so delicious. Join me and my guests every Saturday from 1 to 4 p.m. for tasty new shows, or visit the Tasty Planet on the web by going to www.tastyplanet.org. Listen in and have a good appetite.
This is Frank Don. On Sunday evenings at 7 p.m. here on KRXA 540 a.m., join me for Frank Don's Astrology Hour, a live call-in program to discuss astrology, the astrology of the world, and your own personal astrology. Let me answer your questions, and let me teach you how astrology can help you make better life choices. Here on KRXA 540 a.m. from 7 to 8 every Sunday evening, join me for Frank Don's Astrology Hour.
We continue now on the Peter B. Collins Show. It's 33 minutes past the hour. This is a Neil Young tune called Crime in the City, Part 1. And you know, there's much more crime on television than there is anywhere else, including on the meanest streets of America. You got cops, you got America's Most Wanted, and all kinds of imitators. And one of the most recent developments in the last couple of years is a segment that has grown into a monster. It started off on Dateline NBC, and the network has been collaborating with a website that borders on the bizarre and the perverted, and it's called pervertedjustice.com. Richard Rappaport is a freelance journalist in the San Francisco Bay Area, a longtime pal of mine. And back before Christmas, he was on the program where he talked about a piece that he had written that had not yet been published. And since then, it was published on January 7 this year in the San Francisco Chronicle. You can find it at sfgate.com if you want to find the Chronicle version. I have it up here at Common Dreams News Center where it was published as well. And that was just today. And I understand from Richard that it's on tons of websites all over the country. Is that right?
It's been picked up. It seems to have struck a nerve, and it's kind of one of those raw nerves I think it struck.
Yeah.
You know, I got all kinds of emails. I rarely sort of have my email address on pieces just because, you know, you have to respond to all of them, and sometimes it takes a long time. But I got a lot of them. They're really interesting, and they said it mostly better than I could say it. There was a woman in Joplin, Missouri, who wrote me and said, you know, she and her husband didn't want to watch these types of programs. They will make violent police action look normal and justified. They will make people accept that type of policing. And, you know, in two sentences, she said what it took me a whole story to try and say. And I think, you know, a lot of people are more concerned about a turn that we've taken in this country towards kind of a rougher, meaner justice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and kind of somebody was wonderful and sent me some interesting material, including some quotes from a guy named Nick Pastore, who used to be the police chief in New Haven, Connecticut, kind of in reference to your introduction. You know, he said, mean-spirited policing leads to mean streets.
Yeah.
I would say, not to mention mean-spirited entrapment, which mm-hmm. is where To Catch a Predator comes down.
Well, and this is significant in my view, Richard, in a number of ways. A major and powerful network like NBC has decided that this whole scenario, as I mentioned, they have people who pose as 14-year-old girls and get on the internet and go into chat rooms, probably use Craigslist or other ways to connect with people, and they basically get guys who think that they're going to show up at a girl's house where her parents aren't home and have a sex party. And while, you know, I don't for a minute condone either the inclinations or the behavior of the males that they entrap in this manner, that said, they are intentionally creating the bait, the jail bait, for this kind of vigilante vice squad that is then creating cheap content for primetime television. It's cheap to produce, it draws high ratings, and I think that it is not morally justifiable.
Well, I think what you have here is they have this enormous ironclad insurance policy which says the people we're going to take down here are child molesters and perverts. Therefore, you know, nobody's going to defend them. They have no rights. We're just, you know, they're a segment of the population we could wipe out, and nobody would shed a tear. The problem comes that, you know, when they're done with that segment, who do they move on to next? You know, I guess, you know, there are all kinds of legalistic arguments about why entrapment is dangerous and stupid and bad police work. But, you know, at the end of the day, to me, it just, there's something about it that is alien to the America I grew up in and was brought up to expect, you know?
Well, I feel like we're going back to the Colosseum, and we're having kind of mob justice applied via, you know, the boob tube in our living rooms. And I feel like the whole reason that NBC puts on Drek like this is that they know from their market research that it will draw an audience. As I mentioned, it's cheap to produce, draws a big audience, so the network makes a lot of money on it. And I think that you have to be almost like a pornographer to decide to put something like that on, because it's not only irresponsible in a legal sense. After all, I don't believe once they entrap these people on camera and get them to sign releases so they can broadcast it, that they can actually prosecute them fully for their intent. I'll bet most of these people plea bargain and end up, you know, drawing a short sentence in the county jail or something like that. And their best hope is to avoid being tagged as a sex offender and having to register for as a sex offender for the rest of their lives.
I suspect that part of that sentence is often signing a release so that NBC can broadcast your face.
Well, and that suggests collusion between the media and law enforcement and this murky group called Perverted Justice. And man, it just is sordid, Richard.
It's kind of like there's a phrase in Latin, tu quoque, which is to accuse somebody else of what you're doing. And it seems like this group, Perverted Justice, is, you go to the website and you see a very sexual, very touchy-feely sort of series of things. You know, they sell thong underwear, among other things, on which is written, you know, this meat has been aged more than 18 years. I mean, it sort of takes what it's supposed to be attacking and is it, you know?
Exploits it.
Yeah, it's very ugly, very unpleasant.
And we now know that NBC is paying this website, and it appears to be just a handful of people, $100,000 per episode for serving up the victims of this, you know, phony entrapment scheme.
Well, I think, you know, NBC has a lot to answer for, because if you look at this website, I mean, these are kids, you know, these are people who really don't have a lot of experience. They've kind of hit something that works for them. And so it's not so much them, but that a business like NBC, General Electric, would fund something like this, would find it, you know, useful to do that. It's a very scary thing. You know, I mean, you were talking about the Colosseum. I guess, you know, they're, you know, so far they're judge and jury, and I just wonder if the next step is for them to be the executioner as well.
Yeah. We're talking with Richard Rappaport here on the Peter B. Collins Show. If you'd like to join us, we've got lines open at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. And I invited Richard on today because tomorrow he is going to be a guest on the NPR national live broadcast called Talk of the Nation. It airs from 11 to noon Pacific time. And it's surprising, but Chris Hansen, the man that we've been talking about from NBC, has agreed to appear on the program with Richard. We presume that he's read your article.
Well, he does work for television, though, so that's not a given. might bring him a tape of this program, however.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is going to be very, very interesting, Richard. And going into it, you know that there are a lot of people who don't think deeply about the Constitution, about the more serious issues that entrapment addresses or relates to, and that many people really come to a snap judgment. Okay, so what if they created a trap? I saw one of the emails you got. A guy said, hey, everybody knows there's a lot of cash at banks. That doesn't mean that it's okay to rob a bank. And nobody is condoning the behavior of these people who get caught up in this trap. But as a human being and a male, Richard, I have to acknowledge that I've had to control myself at different times when the thinking apparatus below the belt took over.
That's right. There's only enough blood for one at a time. Isn't that the joke?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, we all have urges and inclinations. I've never wanted to have sex with a 14-year-old. But at the same time, when somebody dangles an opportunity like that in front of a suggestible individual, who's responsible for that crime? In my view, you can't put 100% of it on this guy who shows up as a predator and becomes a victim of a major media outlet.
Well, you know, the way I think about it, there's a plaque on the steps of the administration building at my old college, Hobart College in Geneva, New York, and it's a quote from Henry David Thoreau, which tells us that the ends pre-exist in the means. So, you know, to me what that means is no matter how noble Mr. Hansen believes that his ends are, you know, his means and the associations he's involved with are so disreputable that it would seem to cancel out whatever good he thinks he's doing in the first place, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of my take on it, that he is so corrupted by the process that he couldn't possibly be doing any good, you know?
Well, the other thing is that I don't single out NBC for this. But let's just take Will and Grace, all right, a show that they made millions of dollars on over the years, a highly sexualized program where every other joke was about sexuality in some way or another. Television focuses, you know, almost every program that isn't about murder on sex, and sometimes it's both. And so we do have to observe that the film industry and the television industry have played a role in sexualizing adolescent girls, even preteen girls. You see, you know, girls at the mall with their butt crack showing. It's now called the coin slot, in high fashion jeans. And some of them, you know, have a big label across their butts that says juicy. And, you know, these are very young girls. And, you know, not only do our mainstream corporate media promote the acquisition of these products that then sexualize these young girls, but many parents go along with it and either enable or don't stop their children from operating in this manner. So, you know, there are many issues at play here, and the media has a role in many of those issues.
Well, I think, you know, we make a mistake if we sort of relegate everything to the police. I mean, parents have responsibilities. People have their own responsibilities. You know, we have to kind of look at everything short of getting the police involved in this, because that's kind of the tendency these days. You know, and I think, you know, writing the piece, the first part of it had to do with the show Cops.
Mm-hmm.
And the last part of it very much to do with kind of the SWAT mentality. You know, and I think that what's happening, what, you know, the rest of this, you know, I think it's for families to decide, to deal with. I think, this era of zero tolerance we're living in sort of makes it that, you know, as soon as there's a dispute, somebody has to officially deal with it, and that means the police.
Mm-hmm. And, go ahead, yeah. Well, what I was going to ask you about is if Mark Foley, the Republican congressman who got popped, he was the one who was crusading for laws to prevent the use of the Internet to prey on young children, and he was doing exactly that. Does he have any connection to Catch a Predator? Has he been quoted, or has he promoted it?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, there's a quote, a speech he gave when he talked about To Catch a Predator lauding it as having, quote, done more than any law we can create. But, you know, it's funny. I wasn't surprised at all that he is one of the chief defenders of To Catch a Predator. You know, he's somebody who knows a lot about online predation. It seems like, you know, his support for perverted justice and To Catch a Predator isn't coincidental. You know, what I think it is that here's a guy who had an unerring eye for highly successful scams. I mean, he saw how he could get elected, stay elected, how he could keep his own predatory problems out of the press. And he went for it. And when he looked at these people and how this thing worked, it was something I think he admired and understood.
Yeah. We're going to take a break and return with Richard Rappaport. As I mentioned, he's a guest on Talk of the Nation on National Public Radio tomorrow, 11 a.m. Pacific Time. And Chris Hansen from NBC has agreed to be on the program with him. I think it's going to be very interesting. We'll go to the phones next. If you'd like to join us, I want to hear your reaction. 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. Listening to KRXA 540. You're listening to the news, KRXA 540. Listening to KRXA 540. KRXA 540, progressive talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz.
On Rock Roll
You're
Real
listening
Estate,
to
your number
KRXA
one Sunday morning real estate
540.
Show. We'll have Jim Ross, the president and founder of National Real Estate Holdings. Jim specializes in undervalued pre-construction real estate opportunities. That's this week on Rock Roller Real Estate, Sunday mornings at 10. For more information, call 408-892-3376 or visit our website, rockrollerrealestate.com. Rock Roller Real Estate, Sunday mornings at 10, right here on KRXA 540.
Come on in, and you will see the Central Avenue Bakery.
You're listening to the new KRXA 540.
Everything's so tasty, you want to take it all home. Vegetarian is a filler affair. We make our meals in a kosher kitchen. I'll make mine falafel with hummus stew. A side of couscous and a bite of galoosh, yeah. Open at 7. Every day, have a cup of coffee or your morning latte. Come on in and sit right down. It's the friendliest place in town. Central Avenue Bakery in PG.
For an unforgettable omelet experience, visit the Central Avenue Bakery today. 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey, PG.
Join me, Deborah Lindsay, each Sunday afternoon at 2 for Tomorrow Matters. We'll be matching the global problems of today with the local solutions for a better tomorrow. I'll bring in the guests, and you call with the questions and ideas, and collectively we'll set the standards for a more sustainable future, because for all of us, tomorrow matters. Join me
KRXA
right here on KRXA 540
for Monterey,
AM
Salinas,
for Tomorrow Matters each Sunday at 2.
been a very pleasant good evening to you. Let's give you the very latest as far as traffic is concerned. And we are going to mention a problem in Marina, southbound 1 before Salinas River Bridge. We have a stalled vehicle now. It's partially blocking the roadway. CHP is on the way to the scene. Speaking of Marina, Del Monte Boulevard at Highway 1, we have another problem. It's a pickup truck on its side. It's on the right shoulder of the on-ramp there. What I can tell you, CHP is en route to that particular situation as well. In San Martin, Maple Avenue, La Lagos Avenue, a solo vehicle is on the right shoulder. CHP telling us that someone may have fled the scene on foot, and CHP is on the scene, so there's a bit of a search right now for that individual. And this report is brought to you by BottlesandCans.com. Recycling refunds have gone up now. Small beverage containers are worth 5 cents, and the bigger ones are worth 10. Visit BottlesandCans.com. Recycle, it's in your hands. That's traffic on KRXA.
To justify their vengeful or, kind of vigilante behavior after that loss. And I fully expect that Chris Hansen, whom I know nothing about, I've seen 2 episodes of To Catch a Predator, and that's all I know about him. I imagine he's going to spring a story on you on a daughter or a niece or a loved one who was involved in some, internet-based predatory sex act, and try to use that to just wash away any rational argument that you or others make about the constitutional issues and the fundamental morality of creating a crime for people to get entrapped by.
Maybe you should ask your audience to call in and give me some ideas about how to defend against that. I mean, some things come to mind. First of all, that quote from Henry David Thoreau, I think, is very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
A little distant, then probably another even more distant one was when John Adams talked about America's success as a nation of laws, not of men. But I suppose that's not particularly soul-satisfying when you,
He'll tell you they weren't around when the internets were invented.
Well, that's right.
And that this is a whole new era. It takes new tools, and we can't let, quaint little things like the Constitution and due process limit our ability to find and capture people before they can commit a crime. I mean, it's preemptive. It's like the Bush Doctrine.
Well, pretty soon we'll be able to put implants in people's heads and just stop them before they even start. But I'm not sure that's the world I want to live in.
Well, and there was a really bad Tom Cruise movie like that just a couple of years ago. Dave in Humboldt, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show with Richard Rappaport.
Oh, thank you, Peter. And Richard, I think Peter is touching on the point that I'm observing. That is, as I'm listening to you, it occurs that these police misusing their powers of entrapment is reflective of what is going on in so many aspects of this nation right now that our citizens' rights and freedoms are in jeopardy on every level. It's no longer are warrants called for where they were. Privacy is invaded wherever they choose to. On and on and on. So,
that's a very good point right there that, we now permit the FBI to write its own warrants. They don't have to go to the FISA court. They basically just have to say, oh, we think Dave's a terrorist and we want to check out his computer. And you have no legal recourse. And, in fact, the Patriot Act prevents your bank, if they go contact your bank and ask for the records, or it used to be your library, it prevented those people from even notifying you that your records had been examined.
Anyway, I guess my question is this all tied in? Rights are being taken?
I have a piece I've been working on called Welcome to ZT America. And ZT means zero tolerance. And I think over the last 30 years, there's been an expansion of this notion that in America, when you're, because we're so highly mediaized, because everything is so public so quickly, instead of 3 strikes and you're out, which is what it was when I was growing up, it's now 1 strike and you're out. And it's pernicious and it's poisonous and it does things like it, it's not just legal problems, it has the effect of limiting creativity.
Well, and I'm going to mention this as we kick off the free speech zone in a couple of minutes. We now know that the members of the Duke lacrosse team were completely innocent of the rape that they were charged with. But a media frenzy, aided and abetted by a prosecutor up for re-election, led to the conviction of these individuals in the media, despite the questionable, credibility of the victim from the get-go. And, you know, most people just assumed, well, you know, white guys, black girl, sure they did it. And let's sit back on TV and watch this unfold. Dave, thanks for your call today. And, Richard, finally, you reference in your article a new show called Armed and Famous. Is this baby out yet?
Yeah, last Wednesday it had its debut, and it's as despicable as all the rest of them, because not only does it sort of take law enforcement for granted, it puts people like, what was his name, from Chips?
Eric Estrada?
Eric Estrada, back in uniform, and he can actually arrest people. And so it's sort of united the cops mentality with the celebrity mentality. And, CBS thinks it has a hit, as despicable as, that concept is.
Now, do they entrap people, or do they go out and investigate burglaries or domestic violence cases? How does it work?
I tell you, you better not be speeding up 101, because LaToya Jackson might just pull you over and write a ticket. It's just, it's hard not to have your mind boggled by all this, but you really have to work at not doing that, because sooner or later somebody's going to come to their senses, and then we're going to have to pick up the pieces, I suspect.
Yeah. Well, Richard, good luck tomorrow on Talk of the Nation.
Well, thanks. Thank you for letting me crib a little bit here.
Okay.
Appreciate it, Peter. So take care.
I give you full license to anything you heard on the program today. You go get them, and I hope you'll be able to find out if indeed Chris Hansen has any shame.
I think we'll find that out tomorrow.
Okay.
All right, take care.
Very good. Richard Rappaport. And just Google Rappaport, R-A-P-A-P-O-R-T. Richard Rappaport, and you can find the article we're talking about. Coming up next, the Free Speech Zone. I want to talk to you about this, the Duke rape case, Bush's interview, the cozy little softball session on 60 Minutes last night. And if you want to add something else, I'm open to it. Lines available for you right now, 888-5 Peter B. The Free Speech Zone is next on the Peter B. Collins Show.
The Billy Sunshine Show.
Billy Sunshine Show.
With P-Lar. With P-Lar.
Sunday at 3 o'clock, we're going to be doing something new, something different. Or we'll do the same old thing. Take your phone calls. One thing we know for sure, I'll have something to say.
What?
I don't know. I never know until I've said it. Find out what's the next thing to come out of my mouth.
The Billy Sunshine Show with P-Lar.
Sundays from 3 to 5.
3 to 5. On AM 540. KRXA.
There's more than one side to every issue. Actually, there's usually more than two sides. It's important to get a different perspective on issues and current events, and that's what we'll provide you on Thursday nights at 10 on KRXA 540. Our show is called, appropriately enough, A Different Perspective. I'm Jack Quirk, and I'm your host. I have guests with a unique angle on current issues. I'm often joined by Phil Ropp and other guest co-hosts who bring their own expertise to our discussions. Join us each Thursday night at 10 for A Different Perspective here on KRXA.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. So close and yet so far. President Bush, continuing his Latin America tour, arrived late today in Montevideo, Uruguay. Just across the River Plata in Buenos Aires, Argentina, Venezuela's leftist leader, Hugo Chavez, led an anti-Bush rally.
Somos los hijos de Bolívar! Somos los hijos de San Martín! Somos los hijos de Vito!
The rally was held in a soccer stadium. Reporter Brian Burns was there.
There's been a lot of anticipation for the past few weeks here in Argentina and throughout Latin America for this particular visit from Hugo Chavez. The people here have a very strong relationship with Chavez, at least those, of course, of his followers. They really hang by every single word he has to say. And you can hear from the noise in the stadium right now, they're eating up every word he has to say.
Mr. Bush spent the day in Sao Paulo, Brazil, where he and Brazilian President Lula signed an agreement to cooperate on development of biofuel technology.
One reason we're optimistic is because we see the bright and real potential for our citizens being able to use alternative sources of energy that will promote the common good.
With this trip, the president said he's trying to explain that the United States is generous and compassionate. Some members of Congress are talking about changing the Patriot Act. This after a Justice Department audit revealed that it's frequently been misused by the FBI to obtain personal information on people in this country. Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez says that's unacceptable.
Failure to adequately protect information privacy simply is a failure to do our jobs.
He's not ruling out criminal charges. FBI Director Robert Mueller says he should be held accountable for not putting more safeguards in place. Another missing hard drive, another security breach. The California National Guard is notifying 1,300 soldiers deployed along the U.S.-Mexican border that their social security numbers and other personal information were on a hard drive that was apparently stolen last month. On the eve of a regional conference in Iraq, the Iraqi military says it's captured a key insurgent. Abu Omar al-Baghdadi is the leader of an al-Qaeda-affiliated group called Islamic State of Iraq. It's claimed responsibility for several bloody attacks recently. Former CIA analyst Michael Scheuer is a CBS News consultant.
It's an important capture. It's not something that's going to destroy.